You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute and a half past the hour on this Thursday evening, the second day of July. And we're loaded for bear tonight. In some cases, people may in certain parts of the country may actually be loading for bear. I have fun with guns. That's coming up without a doubt. I'm Bob. This is The Horn. Thanks for joining me this evening. Thanks for sticking around. Hope you enjoy the next 3 hours. Chime in. You know how to do it. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on, or 304-658-3333 on your own long-distance nickel or dime or buck. It's just that easy. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. Learn it, know it, use it. Chat room's open and fully functioning. Lots of folks already in there this evening. Benny's there. Cobwebs, ELO, Lilo, Lottie, Arduke, Texas Betsy. It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful evening. I'm just certain of it. And a question to begin the program. The question that begins the program this evening is the same question that ended the program last night. I asked as we closed the show last night, has anyone heard from Cynthia McKinney since she was kidnapped by the Israelis? You recall that you know what happened. She was on a boat on a humanitarian mission to the Gaza Strip when her vessel was seized in international waters. In other words, an act of piracy by the Israeli Navy. And she has since been imprisoned, and we don't know anything about her release. She did manage to get a phone call out to the free world, and that phone call was published at WBAI in exile. I'm going to play you the audio. It comes from WBAI in exile. If you want to hear it again for yourself, it's at, on YouTube. Cynthia McKinney calls WBAIX while in Israeli prison. Sandra sent this along to me. And why is this being tolerated? Why is the United States tolerating the kidnapping of one of its citizens? Why is Ireland tolerating the kidnapping of a Nobel laureate from that country? No idea. Oh, I got a pretty good idea. But here's what Cynthia McKinney had to say. It begins the program tonight.
This is Cynthia McKinney, and I'm calling from an Israeli prison cell block. The Free Gaza 21 who are human rights activists trying to take medical supplies, building supplies, and mostly crayons for children. I had a suitcase full of crayons for children to Gaza. And while we were on our way to Gaza, the Israelis threatened to fire on our boat. We did not turn around. Because we didn't turn around, the Israelis hijacked us because we wanted to give crayons to the children of Gaza. While we've been here, we have heard stories. We're in the women's section, and I have met women from Eritrea, Ethiopia, Sudan, Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast, Niger, and all of these women say the same thing, that they arrived here in a very difficult way. They came here through the United Nations. They have paperwork from the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, but when they arrived in Israel, they were taken by the police because Israel says to them, there is no UN in Israel. And what they all say is that we as foreigners have no rights. It's clear that the children of Palestine also don't have any rights. Something as simple as crayon for children. We have not committed any crime. We have been detained. And we want the people, really, of the world to see how we have been treated just because we wanted to deliver humanitarian assistance to the people of Gaza. It is incumbent upon President Obama to stand by his reported policy of easing the Gazan blockade and of allowing building supplies, medical supplies, and school supplies to go through. We call upon President Obama to use the highest levels of his authority to transmit this message to the Israelis. Let the Free Gaza 21 go, but also help the Palestinian people and the children of Gaza to assert and enjoy their natural human rights.
There you have it. Terrorist crayons. Such is the nature of the stranglehold that Israel holds on the occupied territories that it reserves the rights to seize crayons. Crayons. That is the kind of paranoia you get from a rogue state. Crayons. Crayons. Did you hear that? There was something else in there. Did you hear that business about the fact that it doesn't matter how much UN paperwork you have? You have no rights? Now we know where the Bush administration learned all that crap. You are a foreigner. You have no rights. That's okay. We're still writing the checks. You're writing them. I'm writing them. We're paying for that to be done to those refugees. We're paying for that to be done to Cynthia McKinney. By the way, via Texas Betsy and her blog, an article from Fox News. Cynthia McKinney remains imprisoned in Israel after Gaza-bound boat is seized. They remain imprisoned because they refuse to sign a deportation form that they claim is self-incriminating. What is that? Sign this confession and you go free? No, I don't think Cynthia McKinney's cut from that cloth. The failure on the part of the State Department, however, is quite disturbing. State Department and White House officials have not affected our release or taken a strong public stance to condemn the illegal actions of the Israeli Navy of enforcing a blockade of humanitarian assistance to the Palestinians of Gaza, a blockade that has been condemned by President Obama, she said. Yigal Palmore is a spokesman for the Israeli Foreign Ministry and says that Israel plans to free the crew and passengers. Nobody wants to keep them here, he said. They'll be released as soon as they're checked. Thus far, the only people released have been Israeli citizens. The rest are held in Givan prison in Ramla, Israel. The crickets. Now, bear in mind, if this was done by the Koreans, you know, the North Koreans, that we'd have something to say about it. If this was done by the Iranians, we would most assuredly have something to say about it. We'd probably say it with gunfire and bombs. If this was done by the Venezuelans, well, hell would yawn wide open with our indignation and outrage. But since it's Israel, we take it. Because we are afraid. And I don't understand that. But it is sickening. So the question continues to be asked, where is Cynthia McKinney? Why is Cynthia McKinney not free? The larger question, why does Israel, that receives billions in aid from the United States and has for generations now, why are they terrified of crayons, of medical supplies, of needed necessities of human life? Why? Apparently, looking to the Obama administration for an answer to that question is sadly pointless. Where is Cynthia McKinney? When will Cynthia McKinney be free? So that's where we start. That's where we start this evening. We will go a lot of other places. The right-wing insanity is absolutely loose on the high road in America. I hate giving the goober free publicity. But Glenn Beck is losing his mind. No, really.
The incumbent Republican senator who put up a very valiant effort over many months. He has now conceded.
Just don't tell me Al Franken won until the end of the show.
Ahmadinejad gains votes in recount. Just like in our country. It happened just like in our country. Norm Coleman wins in Minnesota. They have a recount, and they keep having recounts, and Al Franken wins.
By the way, folks, yeah. This guy, Franken, he's not all there.
Al Franken in Minnesota, the new senator.
I'm in denial.
But let's start with this.
This is like having me in the Senate. You don't want me as a senator. This is, what is that?
Oh, but Glenn, we do.
It shows how crazy our country has gone.
Yeah. But I, in my heart of hearts, do not believe that Al Franken won that election.
There are now 60 votes in the Senate because Al Franken has now, it's like having me as a senator.
Oof.
You have this serious progressive arm in the Senate. How are you going to be able to stop it?
We have entered a place, and with Al Franken coming into office, we've entered a place to where there isn't statesmanship anymore.
But straight ahead, let's talk about who's safe now that Al Franken's going to be in the Senate. He's a senator from Minnesota. Yes, I said it out loud, and it hurts, but I said it.
Yeah, that compilation is, of course, from our friends at Media Matters for America. Yeah, there's going to be no more statesmanship in the Senate because Al Franken is in the Senate. Meanwhile, let's check in on statesmanship real quick. When you want statesmanship, there's really no better place to go than, say, how about Senator Jim Inhofe, the pig-licking from Oklahoma, whom Bart Kopp refers to as Senator Pissquick. Here's some of that senatorial right-wing statesmanship. This is from the Tulsa World. I'll tell you what a lot of people are thinking, and that is it looks like things are going to be over, and we are going to get the clown from Minnesota. I didn't mean to be disrespectful. I don't know the guy, but for a living, he is a clown. That's what he does for a living. No, Senator Inhofe, that's what you do for a living. You make a mockery of the United States Senate. You make a mockery of its processes, its procedures, and its history. If there's a clown in the Senate, Senator Inhofe, you'd be it. What all this is fear. Gut-bending, water-boweling fear. All these repiglicans who, during their majority, were used to standing up, a la the Rick Sanctum Santorum, and do things like refer to Democrats as Nazis from the floor of the Senate, they're afraid that they just might have someone going into that august body who's going to have the wit and the sharpness and the quickness on his feet to make them eat it and smile. It's fear, what you're smelling coming off the right wing, the rabid, the weird, the vicious, the hateful right wing of this country. It's fear. He's a clown. He can't be taken seriously. He's a clown. But they know, in the dark and still of the night, at 3 a.m. when they sit bolt upright in bed with those little beads of sweat rolling down their jowly, white, doughy faces, they know that the next time they make some smart-ass crack, and Al Franken's sitting in the Senate, he might just find a way to stand up, take those wise words that have been uttered, turn them sideways, and jam them where the right-wing sun don't shine. And they're scared because, in the end, they realize that if he turns out to be a real liberal and a real progressive, and frankly, that jury is still out. Or as dim former leader likes to say, that verdict is still out. God, and they have the nerve to call somebody a clown. That jury is still out on how liberal he will be. But if he does turn out to be liberal, he may be a mean fighting liberal. And, you know, that's how it is with a bully. If a bully thinks he's going to get punched in the nose, the bully isn't quite so big and brave anymore. So let the hysteria begin. You can hear right-wing heads just going all over the country. And it's kind of cute, really. You know, it's that scene from Mars Attacks where that's it. Al Franken is the political equivalent of Slim Whitman playing inside the little glass-bubbled helmets of the right wing with every blessed yodel. Yep. Yes, indeed. Well, let's get things going. Let's go to the phones and see what's happening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob. How are we today?
Brother Albert, how are you?
Well, I'll tell you, you're right as usual, and yeah, the heads are popping, and it goes to prove, once again, fear is the mind killer, and you know, when you don't have a lot of mind as a, you know, to start out with, and you got a lot of fear, well, you see what we have, and this is what we have, and man, they just don't stop. They just don't stop. We got to give them that. They got. It don't matter how ridiculous, you know, they'll push the envelope, and they certainly are. And I for one, am enjoying it, and I look forward to enjoying it. You know, they can talk. What the hell is Rush Limbaugh talking about? Recounts and adding votes. What the hell is he comparing this country now to Iran?
Well, but you can't really use Rush as a benchmark. He's on dope.
Well,
that's the dope talking.
The minds are on. Yeah, he's on the real dope. Yeah, he's a jerk. What a freak. What a freak. And, you know, just to start out where you opened up, I don't know. And this is something that perplexes me as well. I don't know why Israel gets to be able to do everything they want and anything they want. And they just do it. You know, they don't care what anybody says. They do it. You know, and it's, I don't know. I don't understand why they think they can do these things, or why, you know, why they think they can treat the people that, you know, were native to that country, you know, in the 21st century, how they can treat them like that. I don't understand it. I don't understand why they get a free pass to do anything they want. I mean, is it really the Holocaust? Is that why they're able to, you know, bomb U.S. warships and, you know, bomb this and bomb that and put people in, you know, virtual concentration camps with walls and checkpoints and, you know, putting settlements, you know, and you know, on the one hand, feeding these settlers, you know, weapons and God knows what else and all this other assistance, and then, you know, having these settlers run amok in their towns. I mean, I don't understand, you know, I mean, it's some crayons. It's crayons. You're not even going to let them have crayons? I mean, they can't have anything.
No crayons.
They, you know, no. Yeah, I mean, come on.
I mean, they might use those crayons to do crude stick drawings of Palestinian citizens, civilians slaughtered in the streets with weapons, you know, partially at least supplied by the United States. And you know, if that kind of stuff gets out, people might get upset.
I don't know. When it's, you know, I mean, I think to anybody who's been paying attention for any length of time, I mean, you see in a sense how wrong they are. I mean, they're just wrong. I mean, Israel acts like a big bully, and I, for one, don't appreciate it. I don't admire it. I don't respect it, and I think they need to be brought down a few notches into their behavior. I mean, sure, you know, if they have their own country, I guess in a way they can behave the way they want, but we don't have to. We don't have to enable it. I mean, why? Because they have the first chapter in the book of Abraham? What the hell is this? It's just, it's bass ackwards. I don't know. I'm really, really, really fed up with their behavior, personally. And they don't appear to act civilized. And, you know, then they wonder why the Palestinians don't act civilized. I mean, what do you do when somebody pushes you into a corner and then, you know, constantly has their boot in your face? What do you do? You know, I mean, I think most of these Israelis, you know, I've heard Israelis talk, you know, like, hey, well, the way we treat these people isn't right. You know, and I was in the IDF, and I've seen the documentaries where, you know, people, you know, they're at least honest with the way that we treat them, or the way that they treat them. You know, so, but I don't understand. I mean, who wouldn't in their right mind be a resistor against that kind of oppression? I mean, who? There isn't a single, you know, you can't push people into corners. You can't bully them and then cry because they punch you in the nose. You can't say, I mean, especially, I mean, these people are locked down. So how, of course they're not going to be happy. Of course there's going to be this. Of course there's going to be that. I mean, look at what you're doing. You know, what do you think is going to happen when you put gasoline and fire together? I mean, it's going to light up. And I don't know. It's just ridiculous. You know, they can go into international waters and, you know, arrest people. They could probably come into this country.
Right. Well, and that's the question I keep asking. I'm sure that, you know, somebody out there is willing to start the name calling over it. But when you've got vessels that are loaded with peaceful supplies traversing international waters, and they are stopped and boarded, their cargo is seized, and their the crew and passengers are taken hostage, and their navigational equipment is disassembled and disabled. Is there any other word for that, Albert, besides piracy? I mean, shouldn't the Israeli Navy be flying the Skull and Crossbones now, the Jolly Roger? I mean, is that not an act of piracy on the high seas? I mean, isn't that, for instance, the sort of thing that led Mr. Jefferson to make war on the Tripoli pirates in that same Mediterranean Sea?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that one of the casi belli of the War of 1812, the seizing of American merchantmen by British ships of war? In almost any circumstance whatsoever, is that not deemed an act of war?
Yeah. Well, look at what the Israeli military did to the Liberty. You know, I mean.
Well, yeah, and that almost goes without saying.
I mean, they strafed that boat for hours. You know, strafed it, sent torpedoes into it, missiles into it, trying to sink it. You know, killed I don't know how many servicemen, you know, a bunch, and wounded a bunch of others. And, you know, they saw the American flag. How are you not going to see it? You know, how do you not recognize a U.S. warship? I mean, and, you know, they get away with it. They get away with everything. I mean, I can't think of anything that they've done that they've been held to account for. You know, when we were talking about, you know, going into Iraq, you know, and you know where we all stood on that. So, you know, that goes without saying. But, you know, they were talking about, oh, you know, 14 UN resolutions or whatever. I mean, as far as my knowledge goes, I think Israel has the most amount of UN resolutions against it, and it doesn't ever have to comply with anything. They're almost like the Goldman Sachs or the, you know, I mean, they're untouchable. They're just, you know, you can't touch them. There's nothing that, you know, I don't know what they have. They must have, you know, just some really nasty images of every world leader and every future world leader, because they get away with everything, and it's really a double standard that's, you know, it makes me ill. I don't want to pay for it. You know, I mean, Cynthia McKinney, you know, she's bringing some crayons and, you know, ruffling feathers, and really what they don't want the publicity. They don't want the negative publicity, and they'll just, you know, they jump down on it like they jump down on everything else. You know, I mean, come on, you're going to go arrest them and shit and take everything and then, you know, put these people in jail for bringing in some crayons and food and, you know, whatever else they were bringing. You know, obviously they weren't bringing any weapons. If they were bringing weapons, then that would be an entirely different story. But, you know, obviously that's not happening. But, you know, they act like they were bringing in, you know, Shahalud missiles or whatever the hell else is out there. They act like they're bringing in, you know, ballistic submarines and all this other nonsense when they're not. You know, they crack down on that like they crack down on, you know, everything. And it's just, you know, you can't, you know, and I can argue, you know, we're already being called anti-Semitic for even daring to question. Just quite, why are you behaving this way? You're an anti-Semite. You can't win. It's like arguing, you know, creationism with a creationist. I mean, it's like arguing evolution with one of these guys. You just can't win. You know, they're always going to backtrack to, oh, God gave us this land. You know, I mean, you've seen the video that Max Blumenthal made with, you know, yeah, sure, they were drunk, but, you know, they were sitting there talking all their, God gave us this land, get out, I'll kill you, I'll throw rocks at you, all this other nonsense that they're sitting there talking. This is my land, this is mine. And, you know, just going in being bullies, being thugs, you know, and nobody calls them. No one takes them to the mat on it. Nobody ever dares to do this. And I don't understand. I don't understand how anybody can behave like that and then expect just a free pass. And they do. I mean, they must be the bankers in Monopoly or, you know, just the, they got all the get out of jail free cards. I don't know. I don't know why they get away.
And, you know, one of the, now this is degrees of Kevin Bacon or something maybe, okay. But I just read recently, Albert, that Max Blumenthal, who made that film in Israel with all the young Israelis screaming the N-word about Obama and, you know, just the filth spewing out of their mouths, that film was made by Max Blumenthal. His dad is Sidney Blumenthal. And Sidney Blumenthal has some pretty good liberal cred. Well, guess what? Sidney just went to work and, well, okay, kind of liberal cred. Let's do it that way. Sidney just went back to work. Care to guess who for? The State Department, as an advisor to Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
Now, could it be possible there'll be some leak over? I don't know. You know, hey, Dad, did you see my new movie? Yeah.
I don't know. Well, it's just, you know, I mean, I certainly recognize, you know, I certainly recognize the victimhood mindset that it seems like psychologically that a lot of Israeli supporters have, you know. I understand that, and I can comprehend that, but I don't understand why they can't comprehend how their actions are, and I said it before and I'll say it again, they act like the regime that did the things to them that give them the victimhood status. They act like that. I mean, it's almost, you know, it's archaeological. You can sit there and look at it. The wishbone is the wishbone. The hollow bone is the hollow bone. The scales are feathers. I mean, you can see this and say, well, you know, this is a spade, and a spade is a spade. You can't, you know, they want to argue everything else and 2 + 2 = 5, and it's not. It just is not. And I don't understand how, you know, they get a free pass on it. They just get a free pass on this kind of stuff. And, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, we'll stop the settlements after we build another 1,000 of them and then connect them with a wall. Oh, we'll stop after we build just another 500 of them and then connect them with a wall. And eventually they're going to have the whole land, and it'll all be connected with walls, and they'll, you know, then what? You know, and, you know, what are they going to do with these people? If you don't want to let them have a state, you don't want to let them have water, you don't want to let them be able to travel to their, you know, to the next town over to go see the doctor, you don't want to let them do any of these things, well, why don't you just eat them? Might as well just start eating them, because there's, I mean, you know, this is into Jonathan Swift and the Irish and the English territory. What are you going to do with them? If you can't let them be human beings, oh, well, they're not human beings, they're animals, oh, okay. God didn't give them this land. God gave us this land. Oh, okay. I mean, you can't. It's just like this circular nonsense. And it's just, you know, it's like, to me, it just feels like a slow genocide. It just feels like a slow burn that, you know, eventually they'll, you know, eventually, I don't know what they think they're going to wind up achieving or doing, but it feels to me like they're going to, their game plan is to get the whole land and get it all. And, you know, well,
and it's and of course it's an open definition as to what all means. You know, there is that element, and it is both in fundamentalist Christianity and some fundamentalist movements within Israel that says all means all the way to the Tigris and Euphrates River.
Mm. Yeah.
And you know, frankly, that's something that what's that gang's name? That really pasty, doughy, pustle gutted the con artist from San Antonio, Hagee, Starve! Yeah, he's one of those who believes that.
Oh, yeah.
He believes in a full-on Arabic genocide that leaves a giant blinking come Lord Jesus light that is Israel throughout the entire greater Middle East. And he has his own counterparts within certain religious sects in Israel as well.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Oh, they can't wait. They try to build that temple every year, right? They bring those blocks in and, you know, the footstones that they want to build that temple with. And the really funny thing is these people don't understand where the mythology of their religions come from. You know, they understand the, you know, the sequels and all the other, you know, additions and add-ons and, you know, 2,000 years, 3,000, 4,000 years of nonsense, but they don't understand, because they don't understand the basic archetypes for the root of these myths. I mean, the Christians, the Muslims, all of that. I mean, that stuff comes from a world that we don't have anymore. I mean, and all this stuff comes from the sky. It all comes from the planets. It's all that stuff. And you got to take into account that the sky that the ancient people saw, you know, 5,000 years ago, 6,000 years ago, was a completely different place than it is the way we look up at it. I mean, you just look at these myths. I mean, and this is what these things are. I mean, all that is myth. It's mm-hmm. myth. It's myth. It's myth. So if we're going to sit there and look at myth, let's see what these all these myths worldwide have in common. Well, they all have in common these planets. They all have, I mean, Mars is Mars. The reason Mars is called Mars is because that was Mars, the planet Mars, and Venus is Venus, and Jupiter is Jupiter. I mean, you know, these things are, you know, these archetypes are there, but the archetypes that we have today don't behave the way they used to behave, apparently, back then, worldwide. Now, we see petroglyphs and all these rock art and carvings and, granted, base fundamental mythology, in having all these similarities, the dragon, for example, the standing man, for example, these things are found in Antarctica, I mean, not in Antarctica, in Australia, in Vietnam, in North America, in South America, I mean, just worldwide. People 10,000 years ago saw something, they carved these things, and they're identical to, well, for example, plasma discharge, that we don't happen to have the conditions that are ripe for. So we have this crazy mythology based off of 10,000 years of ancient man witnessing something, and we're going to kill each other over myth. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It just is absolutely...
Exactly, and then, you know, I kind of deal with that stuff on a personal level here, Albert. My son, and I guess in part because he's my son, is a natural-born searcher. He wants to figure... He's 13, and he's off down the road of trying to figure stuff out. And we had to have a conversation because, you know, there's a lot of cute girls and stuff like that down to the local Baptist church, and, you know. And I tried to explain to him. I said, well, you know, if you want to get dunked, I'm not going to stop you. But I want you to understand that the one thing I will not brook in this house is a hypocrite. I said, if you're going to get drunk, if you're going to get dunked, you have to believe everything that they believe, and there's no middle ground. You have to believe that your mama is not quite as human as I am. That women are responsible for all the problems of the world because they had a conversation with a gossipy water moccasin. Son, you have to believe that everything in the Bible is the literal truth. That it really happened. I said, let's try some of it out. You've got a saxophone. Now, the ancient Israelites marched around Jericho blowing horns. Or one of the cities, I forget which. Blowing on horns, just blowing horns. And the walls come tumbling down, and the walls come tumbling down. That's a big, and that was a big old city with 12 foot thick walls, and they fell down. Literally.
Mm-hmm.
So, son, I want you to get out the saxophone, and I want you to start marching around this house. And I don't care if you play Ornette Coleman or Charlie Parker or what, you play that thing and see if the walls come tumbling down.
Well,
I said, there's all kinds of crazy stuff you have to believe if you want to be part of that.
Yeah, and then what would happen, you know, the coal, those coal miners, would, the coal companies would blast something above your house and a rock would come down and, oh, see, God did it. Yeah, you know, you're setting yourself up for a mythological failure. Because when you can interpret things like that.
Yeah,
you know,
epic fail of a different meaning in the word epic.
Exactly. I mean, and this is the beauty of it. I mean, you know, that knowledge is there, and it may or, you know, it's probably most likely not true because it's, you know, its root fundamental, you know, understanding isn't there. So, I mean, you know, I mean, granted, you know, hey, go find all the truth that you can, pile it all up, you know, and then see what you got. But, you know, as you say many, many times, and, you know, you're without a doubt right, you know, saying you believe, you know, it does. It cuts your mind off. It's, you know, it's just like fear.
It's a confession that you have refused or abnegated the willingness to use your knowing faculties.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You stop thinking and if people are going to, you know, feed facts into your mind, you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with, you know, different viewpoints and this and this and that, but I've always looked at it like, you know, get as many as possible. You know, I mean, if you only open your eyes a fraction of the way, you're not going to get the whole picture. So you really need to keep those eyes open and just keep them open and keep them open and that, you know, be your own zeitgeist. You know, that I just, you know, don't let it add. don't let. And plus, you know, heck, he's still a young man, so yeah, don't pen yourself up that early. You know, don't go join the military right now. Wait, give yourself a minute. Let yourself, you know, mature. You know, you don't drink wine before it's time, and you sure as heck don't want to sit there and jump into believing. But hey, sometimes jumping into believing will get you to, you know, see things the way they are in one way.
Oh, there's things he wants to see.
Well, you know, it makes me laugh too. Because,
this is where we go to the Rocky Horror soundtrack and play "Touchy, Touchy, Touchy, Touch Me." I want to be dirty. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, you can't help hormones.
No, you can't.
Yeah, that's kind of where it's at. And you know, I mean, heck, look at how successful their Christian fundamentalist hormone therapies are. Their methods are real good, aren't they? Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Sure. You bet. Yeah.
Yeah. You betcha. These guys are freaks. I mean, and it's fine. You know, everybody's entitled to their own freakiness, and I'll never take that away from anybody because I don't want anybody taking it away from me. But man, there's just, you know, there's times when it's black, and there's times when it's white, and there's times when it's red, and there's, you know, we really have to look at the big picture if we're going to, you know, wind up moving forward. You know, I mean, and I'll tell you what, I'm glad it's summertime, even though it's cold here, because once again, the windmill tubes are starting to run down Highway 14 right by my house. And, you know, that makes me feel good knowing that we defeated the coal ash dump. And now we're seeing just reams of them, Bob, day and night. You're seeing just windmills go down the road, down to Dodgeville, where they're setting up their wind farm. And, you know, where it spreads from there, it's going to spread into other places. And just like I was mentioning in the chat room, you know, we have tons of bees around here this summer. And it's actually been, you know, it's quite a jump compared to what was around last few years. And, you know, so that makes me feel good. And hopefully, you know, the bees and the windmill and the knowledge and the wisdom of certain areas will, you know, ferment and grow and get healthy and spread out across the country. And we can get away from some of these stupid things that we keep doing. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. I don't think that the world is going in the direction that the Israelis and the Hagis and all those kind of people want to see. You know, I don't think it is. And, you know, even when they build their temple, there won't be no Jesus coming back because, you know, the whole Mithras religion and the whole, you know, Horus, all those archetypes for the, you know, the foundational archetypes for the mythology of Jesus aren't in the sky right now. They're not there. We don't exist in the same orbits anymore. So to sit there and, you know, they can do all they want, but it's waste of time. And, you know, maybe sometimes the best way for these people to learn is to have them waste their time and then say, whoa, maybe we are pretty stupid. You know, and so, you know, it's almost like, you know, that mercury ain't doing no problem until, you know, affects my family and now it's an issue. So, you know, it's almost like, you know, live and let live and learn as you go, I guess, you know. I don't know. I don't know. I hope we see a lot more progress than we're seeing, you know, that we've seen the past 8 years. And I think we're already in this year so far. We've seen a lot of progress. So I still got my hat on for hope. And, you know, I can't say everything that Obama's been doing and everybody's been doing has been, you know, great or anything. But at least it's not Bush anymore. My goodness. My goodness. Hey, just, yeah, what are you going to do? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Just live and just, you know, keep that torch alive.
Breathe in.
Keep that fire burning.
Breathe out.
And breathe in and breathe out, yeah. And, you know, we just, we, you know, I mean, Fox News, I mean, these get, Glenn Beck, these guys are becoming so insignificant now. I mean, they're just.
I know, and it's going to be hard to resist, but I got another Beck clip for this evening where he describes the history of Alaska. And, you know, you couldn't pay, again, you know, thank God for them, because you could not pay to have this stuff written.
No.
And by the way, this in from our buddy Marty, and he says, a quote from George Carlin, track 28 of It's Bad for You. The last refuge of a man with no answers and no argument. It came from God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's simply, it's, you know, it's Goodwin's law. You know, it's, I mean, it, you just can't sit, I mean, you know, it's like bringing up Nazis in an argument, you lose. You know, you start talking about, you know, well, God says it, well, you just lost, you know. I mean, you would think there would be a little bit more interaction in the last few thousand years than there has been, and there really hasn't been. I mean, they can, you know, they could try to pass off this and this and that and that, but it just is not feasible. It just doesn't work, you know, and Terry Schiavo isn't going to grow a brain. It's just not happening. You know, heck, maybe, you know, especially if you guys are, you know, stomping on stem cell research at every step you can, you know, this kind of stuff ain't going to happen. Then, you know, they can wish and hope and dream and, you know, pray all they want, but it's just not going to be. You know, I don't know, you know, these, you know, God gave me this land. That's just one of those things. Every time I hear that, I cringe inside. I die a little bit inside. It just.
I still think we could make a deal with Mexico for Baja. And, you know, give it to the Palestinians or the Israelis, whoever takes the offer first. And you get to live in peace and tranquility and harmony, roughly the same size.
Mm-hmm.
If it was Israel, it would certainly save us a lot of fuel costs in transport.
Yeah.
And it's a desert.
I mean, there has
it's a desert where nothing grows. It's worthless sand, just like that is over there.
Yeah, well,
you know, we could, and frankly, we could give a no-bid contract to Disney to build a whole brand-new Temple Mount. Boom. Problem solved.
But Bob, it's not in the same place, and God will lose his way. He won't be able to find us.
Yeah, the almighty, all-powerful won't be able to, yeah, can't, yeah, because he doesn't have a TomTom or a Garmin.
Yeah, and it's, yeah, and this is that deal. It's, you know, Why do you got to fight war over this stuff and massacre each other and slay each other and cause each other pain and misery? I mean, you can't pretend that you.
Because that's what God wants.
Yeah, but see, when you take that, you know, you discredit yourself, because that's, in a sense, you know, if you're going to take out of anything of what God and the archetype of God worldwide wants, that's not even close. You know, I mean, that's your interpretation of how you need to behave, but that's not what, you know, love thy neighbor as thyself and la 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 la, feed the poor. You know, I mean, all this, I mean, come on. It's, I don't know. It's like, you know, it's, they take 1,000 yards every time you give them an inch. And it's just like with kids, you know, they take 1,000 yards every time you give them an inch. And, you know, someone's got to be the parent in this world and say, no, you need to take an inch. All right, here's 2 inches. Well, once you can handle an inch, maybe you can have a foot. You know, and this is, you know, but they take 1,000 yards right off the bat and then take another 10 and another 10 and another. It just, you know, we can't keep, we can't keep consuming ourselves, you know. Right, we're going to get kuru. You know?
Well, you know, Shakespeare, I think it was, was it in that Scottish play, or was it in Hamlet? You know, we can't say the name of the Scottish play because all kinds of hell breaks loose when you do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a line about makes calamity of so long life. And I think actually Shakespeare got it backwards on that one. Because it is the relatively short lifespan of human beings that makes us unable to comprehend the gravity that attends even the smallest acts. And if we lived longer and we were able to take a longer view of history, I can't help but think that we would behave differently. Or maybe being human, we would just do it wrong longer. That's the pessimistic view.
I would agree. No, I 100% agree on that. You know, how would you mine coal? I mean, how could you be a coal miner once you start laying out mountains in over a 200-year lifespan or 300-year lifespan, you would see all this damage, you know, coming to fruition. You know, you wouldn't be a supporter of it anymore. I mean, you know, and heck, you know, maybe we need that life. You know, speaking of lifespan, or speaking of technology, by the way, you know, like, I mean, you know, you got lifespan. Our technology is going to, you know, start enabling even really long lifespans. If we can rebuild hearts with stem cells grown from the, you know, the skin cells of my arm, and I can regrow a heart, you know, you know, in the next 15-20 years, as long as we keep a progressive mind towards, you know, the real fundamental tenets of medicine, which is, you know, helping people and, you know, getting them a healthy life and, you know, curing them and not doing any harm to them. And, you know, that includes the financial stresses and all that stuff. Like, see, that's that whole thing in the Hippocratic Oath that just flips me up backwards and sideways. You know, the stress that we cause people in this country, you know, there was an article, where was it? Was it in, I think it was on Crooks and Liars, where they were talking about Venezuela, you know, and how this lady went down there, she had pneumonia, and she got help and x-rays, and boom, 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 she walked out of there with medication and no bill, but her friend had had the same thing, and she didn't want to go to the doctor because she didn't want to deal with the bills, and she wound up dying of pneumonia in the United States of America with the best, you know, healthcare system in the world. Now, I don't think it takes 300 years of human, you know, of a human lifespan or a thousand or a millennia, or in, you don't have to be immortal to freaking learn eventually that, heck, you know, this stress, these things, these the kills people. You know, the people that, you know, like Michael Jackson, that can afford to have doctors come in and give them Demerol shots every day, or, you know, a Dippy Dap and all the other stuff that these guys get. You know, this stuff kills people. And, you know, I don't think we need to live forever to see this kind of stuff. I sure hope we don't, because, heck, we don't have forever to do that. You know, we have to get our act together, and we got to, you know, do like that little saying on the seventh generation line of paper products, you know, with rephrases the Iroquois Nation mantra of, you know, with every act we have to, you know, think about how this will impact for the next seven generations. Because, you know, these are things that are very important. You know, I mean, that shows if you don't care about the future generations, then you barely care. You don't care, even care about yourself. You know, what the hell's the point of having kids if you're just going to hand them a bunch of crap? You know, and it just... it's just one of those things. I just wanted to kind of bring this up before I let you go. I realize probably other people calling in and, you know,
no,
scramble, but they have body shields are going to happen soon, Bob. They have these systems now on tanks. Have you seen this?
No.
Where there's this, I forget what it's called. It's like some crazy name, but it's this new system that's going on U.S. tanks and U.S. military hardware that actually is a radar system that detects incoming projectiles and renders them inert. It does that to, it can do it to multiple RPGs, it can do it to kinetic objects, it can do it to all these different things, and it's almost like a force field in a sense. So, that's a good thing, because, you know, in my little Dune fantasy, you know, that's one of those things that settled war down to a level that it made it very personal. And if you ask me, that's better. You couldn't just pick up a gun and shoot somebody because their body shield would protect them. So you had to learn how to actually really take someone's life with an art form such as dagger fighting or any of these other kind of art forms in order to do something. So that, you know, there isn't these large scale wars anymore and all this other stuff. So maybe we'll do technological tricks to out trick ourselves and force us into a corner where we can't do these just hideous things to each other anymore. You know, you can't fire a laser gun at a body shield because you set off a nuclear eruption, and you can't have that, can you? You know, so we'll see. We'll see where technology can kind of help, I don't know, pave the way. We get our, you know, we can start, you know, if we can get a nice free energy system, I would imagine, or a nice cleaner energy system off of, you know, more abundant sources of energy other than petroleum, if we can ever get these systems up and running, you know, you would wind up seeing Israel not getting away with, you know, 90% of the things that they get away with. Because let's face it, what they are, you know, is they're like a satellite, you know, military system for us. I mean, you know, in a sense, they're like our little, they're our little linchpin, and they're our keystone for a foothold in that area. You know, I mean, we in a sense, you know, as much as you'd want to say it, you know, when the Roman Empire had a military base somewhere, they owned that place. You know, and when we have military, I mean, when we provide them with everything that in everything, shape, and form, well, they're our little satellite, and that's probably why they get away with the things they get away with, because, you know, in all sense and purposes, you know, they're ours. They're ours to kind of, you know, that's why they get away, you know. They're our favorite puppet or our favorite little you know, henchman. You know, so they get away with doing some nasty things, and I think that's where that comes from. And, you know, but once we get once that oil dries up, and once, you know, and they say that that's coming soon because the non-OPEC states, there was just a study came out, the non-OPEC states will hit peak oil in 1 to 2 years, in the next 1 to 2 years. and then the OPEC states, they literally give them, and maybe it's exaggeration because you never can tell what OPEC really has because they always over-exaggerate what they have anyway, or you know, whatever. They move the goalposts, whatever suits their interests. But, you know, they have another 10 years. So once we, you know, if we don't start doing these things like, you know, wasting petroleum on moving windmills down the road and to get, you know, to get our energy grid up, if we don't start spending energy wisely, you know, we'll be in a world that it won't matter what Israel does anymore. You know, it'll be a Mad Max kind of place. Or we'll get our technological head out of our, you know, rear ends and get us where to where we need to be, and then Israel will have to behave accordingly because they won't have such a geopolitical significance anymore, because really, who's going to care about that? Just the religious freaks? Well, we'll see what happens if Mars and Venus and Saturn don't come back to their celestial, you know, god origins in the sky, which they're probably not, so, you know, we're not going to wind up seeing any of these things. You know, I mean, and this is a big deal. I mean, you know, if you, I really implore everybody, please go out and look up some of these archetypes of the ancient gods and all that other stuff. Go look up that stuff and go take it into account. There's a whole little thing. It's called The Alien Sky. It's on YouTube. It's going to be a 3-hour presentation. Right now it's about an hour, and it's parts all the way up to 5A and 5B. Just go sit there and take a look at some of the research that these guys have done in terms of plasma cosmology and, you know, the ancient myths and how this stuff ties up in, you know, into how these myths were formed. And, you know, you would probably wind up coming out of there with a much broader view of human history that will, you know, show you things that, you know, that where there's people that, you know, they still think Michael Jackson's alive or they think Elvis is alive, and that's where the religious people are. They don't live in this world that we live in. They don't live in reality. You know, every time they're given to demonstrate, they show they have no ground to stand on when they end it with, well, God gave this land to us. You know, so all right, so God gives the land to you, and now we don't need anything from that land anymore because we've sucked it dry. Now what are you going to do? Now what are you going to do? Instead of making friends, you did nothing but make enemies, and now you got to live with all these enemies, and we don't even have the petroleum to come over there and assist you. Now what are you going to do? I mean, I don't understand this short-sighted nonsense. It's in our political system, it's in our economical system, it's all this short-sighted gain. You know, and short-sighted gain is really never the way to go. You know, if I was going to start investing again in Wall Street, I wouldn't invest in any of these companies that aren't going to be around. You know, there's a bunch of companies that just, you know, like GM. Nobody who I know you remember me saying about GM not being around anymore. You know, years ago. And what? What are they? You know, we have down in Viroqua. They had two plants that supplied, you know, all these different parts to you know, all the different oil manufacturers. And there's a Cummins diesel, like they make the mufflers and the catalytic converters for the place. And then there's another one that was NCR, and they made, like, dashboard components and all this other stuff. Guess how many people work at NCR today? Zero.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Zero. There's nobody there. Well, what do you expect? You know, I mean, if we sit there and we fall into every paradox that's imaginable, okay, every time we make any kind of, you know, headway in technology, if we make a, you know, a non-renewable resource, if we become more efficient in extracting that resource or utilizing that resource, the paradox states, I think it's Maddox's paradox, where it states that anytime you become more efficient in extracting or using, you wind up using more of that resource. So if you're 50% more efficient, you use 50% more of the resource that much faster. So this is where we're going. You know, when you sit there and you make vehicles that, you know, nobody, you know, oh, yeah, oh, 4 miles to the gallon, that big deal. We can make the cars more efficient. We pull the oil out of the ground easier, and we do all this. Well, you're just going to use up that resource that much faster. So, you know, we sit there, and then you wonder why there is no future in this. You know, there is no future in whale blubber lamps. Why? Because we almost
buggy whips.
We killed them all. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. There's no future in this. There's no future in wiping our rear ends with, you know, old growth forests. It's just no future in it because we're going to wind up not having any food because nothing's going to grow because the world is going to become a desert when we have no freaking topsoil left because it's all raining down into the ocean. You know, I mean, it just, and then we that we fish the oceans out and we're doing all these things that, you know, theoretically we should know the ocean's an infinite source of, you know, of fish and everything else. It's just not. You know, we live in this finite world. We have a finite lifespan and we better start acting accordingly. You know, or we're just not going to make it. And, you know, the aliens will come down in 10,000 years and look around and say, oh, they're finally gone. We can look around now. You know, I mean, that's pretty much what's, that's the path these people are paving. And I mean, I know you know, and I know everyone listening knows, that's just not the way to behave. It's not the way to act. It's not the way to think. And, you know, we got to think for the future. You know, the future. Yeah, I think the future is pretty important. And anybody with kids will tell you that. And, you know, so, freaking, come on, people, act like it. You know, demand these things, you know, demand them in your local area. You know, there ain't no future in coal mining. You know, that's the thing. You could what future is it? What future could you possibly have destroying the world? Well, I don't understand it. You know, read a book or something. My God. You get some critical thinking ability or something. It's just common sense. If you got 50 jelly beans, you can't eat 50 at a time. You know, I don't know.
Put some by.
We got addicts, you know. It's our addictions, you know. I mean, it's our addictions of power and addictions of resource and addictions of, you know, that just, like, you know, hamstring us. We hamstring ourselves, you know. We put ourselves into these stupid corners and then, you know, then wonder why we have these problems. And, you know, I mean, obviously the horn, you know, I think the people that listen to the horn don't have these problems, like a lot of the people that listen to the AM nonsense or the, you know, watch Fox News, you know, not for media matters or not to find out what these freaks are saying. You know, the people that really buy this kind of stuff, you know, those are the people I'm kind of, you know, criticizing and trying to, you know, maybe slap some sense into them with this criticisms. You know, I mean, man, they're still blaming, you know, and they're still, you know, diverting attention to where it really belongs and where the blame really goes. If you go onto any of these sites and you sit there and they'll talk about, it doesn't matter what site you're on, there'll be somebody who doesn't do something correct, and then they'll say, oh, well, see, it's just like Barack Obama being, you know, not being a good leader and not taking into account and destroying the country and destroying the world. And it's like, excuse me. Hey, listen, not everything the guy's been doing has been, you know, my cup of tea. Not everything that he's been doing is something that I would do. But, my God, are you going to really ignore what this last administration would? I mean,
when you hear that, some of that stuff, it's like a level of the historical denial. You know, the other side has an amazing capacity for that. They're awfully, they deny the Holocaust. Remember the guy who shot up the Holocaust Museum? Yeah, Holocaust is a big lie. And, you know, there's lots of them, and they vote Republican. And, now they're denying 8 years of, I was talking about, maybe this proves my theory wrong, Albert. Maybe we don't need longer life. Because there's a segment of this country, 18-20% or so, that is now actively denying, for the most part, with a few exceptions, the last 8 years. You've got a Republican candidate for governor in the state of Virginia who says he wants to model his governorship on George Bush's term as president. There's video of it, for the love of God.
I don't know if I can.
I love that little chuckle of yours.
I don't know if I can handle that. I can't. I'll probably have to wait a few years to watch that because, you know, I've tried to wash my mind from the Bush, you know, the Bush years and, you know, just kind of concentrate on the future. I don't know if I could handle that. I mean, I just, you know, I watch documentaries, you know, and I've caught up, you know, now that, you know, I got the Netflix and, you know, there's a bunch of documentaries that, you know, weren't available to me in my area that, you know, now I can watch and, you know, get my hands on. So, man, I'm watching these things and it's almost like looking in, I mean, heck, I feel closer to the Nixon years than I do to the Bush years. I mean, and, you know, in the span of a mindset, I model on the Bush, what? What? Oh, I can't handle that. That doesn't compute. That's so stupid. As you say, you know, ignorance is curable and stupid is forever. And, you know, heck, go be stupid. Go ahead, go be stupid. Nobody buys
but dig
that
it. The guy's got a chance. He's got a better than even chance of becoming governor of Virginia.
Well, I sure hope not. I sure hope people in Virginia...
George Bush's economic policies, and this is a quote, the Bush administration economic policies were so successful that they that by 2006 they almost overheated the economy.
Overheated, huh? Yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah, that's you know, that's like those confounded beef ribs that I was trying to smoke out here on my piece of crap smoker that got that it turned into smoking lumps of charcoal. That's like they were overheated.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But you know, but then again, you know, I won't find a connection analogy to the same thing as our economic system because there's really no compare.
GM's dead. Yeah, I'd say overheated.
Yeah, overheated. Yeah, overheated, huh? Yeah, that's overheated when you sit there and change the rules and make, you know, manufacturing jobs, you know, McDonald's. McDonald's is manufacturing. You know, of course. Oh, yeah. Oh, but, you know, the real manufacturing, the real honest manufacturing that's really manufacturing where people are taking raw materials and making stuff like mufflers and, you know, catalytic converters and, you know, dashboard stuff. Well, those manufacturing jobs that pay, you know, manufacturing job wages, middle class wages, you know, $16, $19, $20 an hour, they're gone. The city of Janesville in Wisconsin, they had their Chevy truck plant gone. They're closing up in August. They're gone. They're completely gone. Pontiac, gone. I mean, these things are gone. You talk about economic overheat. Yeah, overheat, because you didn't freaking design the damn vehicle with a radiator, you idiot. You didn't design it with any foresight into it, you know, the fact that you're going to, you know, get the damn thing hot. And you're going to sit, you know, if you don't put these things in, if you don't sit there and go, wow, we're going to run out of oil. We better start, you know, changing our infrastructure to geothermal and solar and da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, you designed an engine. Yeah, it was an economic engine with a head made of silly putty.
Exactly. What the hell are you thinking? It's not going to last, you freak. I mean, we sit here and look. I don't mind so much. I know it's causing pain, and I don't mind so much though. I don't mind that much that NCR and the Nelson muffler place is shutting down. I don't mind. I don't mind that the plant in Janesville is shutting down. That building will still be there because I know that there are uses for that building. There are uses for the people that used to work in that building, and those uses are ways that we can start paving our way to a better future, that a more sustainable future, maybe a longer future. You know, and, you know, and I think on one hand, I think your hypothesis of, you know, human lifespan, you know, it has its merits and its demerits. And, you know, one of those things, the longer lifespan, I think, would help people see that they need to be more sustainable. But also the shorter lifespan can also help people see that they need to be more sustainable because they'll see how fast it winds down. They'll see how fast, you know, they got to sit here and make an answer and make, you know, we need answers. We don't need all these nonsensical old ways of doing things. We need new answers. We need new questions. We need just some old questions to be answered. I think, and that's one thing that, you know, that's helped me kind of forget a lot of the Bush administration. You know, not that I've forgotten it, you know, but I forget that that ambiance of just disgust. I don't wake up every morning with a yeah. You know, I don't wake up with hatred anymore. You know, it's just this nauseous, like, I was drinking, you know, 230 packs of, you know, cheap swill. You know, I don't have to wake up with a hangover every day.
Oh, you mean the Keystone wake up?
Oh, the Keystone wake up or the natural ice wake up or
Natty Bow. Yeah, I know.
Why is my tongue so and teeth so hairy? I don't wake up like that, but I haven't forgotten the horrors of the Bush administration. I haven't forgotten that, you know, that of the mess that these people caused. I'm just, you know, I'm relieved and rehydrated with the fact that people are starting to ask the questions and starting to look for the solutions that we should have been doing, you know, back then with the things that Carter started doing. You know, I want to see, have solar panels got on the top of the White House yet? Well, heck, they need to be there. Have they been on top of the SOB building yet? No? Well, they need to get there. They need to not only be on those buildings, they need to be on every building, and we need to get these things going now. You know, I mean, screw GM. Let's make GM General Manufacturing. Let's start making them make these solar panel frames and solar panel whatever. I mean, Bob, we can print with it's a special ink, but the printer that's sitting near in your office can print solar panel cells. It can do it. And they're actually damn efficient. They're more efficient than what Jimmy Carter put on the White House 30 years ago. They're more efficient. I mean, and you can print them. You just need the right ink, but you can print them up. You can make your own solar panels. I mean, now, granted, that's a little bit of a stretch. I don't think people are going to be doing that, but we can do it with the technology we have right now. These buildings, these factories that are getting shut down, you know, can indeed, you know, sit there and meet our needs. You know, I mean, I liked how in that energy bill, didn't some Republican try to put in some, amendment to where he would make the new Manhattan. Now, that sounds good.
New
Manhattan Project for Energy. He was trying to do that. Now, that sounds real good. But were they really serious about that? Do they really, really, really want that? I have my doubts if these people who have, you know, been sucking us for years, decades, generations, you know, I really have my doubts that they really, really want to see a Manhattan Project for a new energy source. Because I'll tell you what, they'd lose a lot of power.
No, because the old energy source is still making plenty of money. You're exactly right.
Oh, true. Yeah. True.
All right, Albert, we'll roll along, but as ever, we go all over the place in these conversations, and I love them.
All right, brother. All right, man. Thanks. Appreciate you tolerating my ramblings.
Oh, no tolerating involved. And by the way, I was the word was let leak today for what my Christmas present will be.
What is it?
Well, apparently they're taking orders for L4D2.
Help me out. What is that?
Zombies, man. Zombies.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Oh, you got me going there. You got to get L4D1 first, though. And I got to teach you how to do it. So what you do, don't forget, Man Candy. I'm Man Candy. That's my name on there. So
okay.
Come and get me, Bob.
All right.
All right, brother?
All right, man. We'll talk to you later, Albert.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye. The Sage of Southwest Wisconsin, that is Albert. And if you are on hold, please stay that way. We've got to do our top of the hour. We're going to try to get a little bit more organized here with Bob taking top of the hour breaks, which I've already sort of put out the window because it's 11 past the hour already. But I've got to start, just to let you know, I've got to start doing that because of some cool stuff that John Fox and Ben Birch and Sue are working on for the weekend stream. And I think you're really going to like it. In addition to the regular programming on the weekends, you know, Billy Shears and Night Sounds and the Rick Smith Show and Rick's Place with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, who will be coming back off vacation, I do believe, this coming weekend. We've got some changes to the weekend rerun stream, and that involves me actually hitting top of the hour breaks, which I completely just screwed up. So we will take a little break, and if you are on hold, please remain that way, and I will start hitting phone buttons when we get back. And look, you know, jump in. The conversation is fine. You know how to do it. 877-443-2366, 877. The numeral 4, head on. This is Activist Radio, listener-supported liberal radio. This is The Horn.
Sitting in the stand of the sports arena, waiting for the show to begin. Red lights, green lights, strawberry wine. A good friend of mine follows the stars. Venus and Mars are alright tonight. We'll be right back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, July 2nd, 2009.
California wins one for a change. Where's the beef? Recalled. Plus,
let's talk about cap and trade, shall we, Glenn Beck?
Exactly.
The House of Representatives just passed the largest tax increase in the history of the world.
Wingnut meltdown over cap and trade.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report. All right, Desi Doyen, good to have you back.
Thank you. Welcome back. Thank you.
A lot going on today in the green world. What you got?
Since passage of the landmark climate and energy bill in the House of Representatives on Friday, the fallout has been swift from Republicans and critics of the legislation. The Waxman-Markey bill, formerly known as the American Clean Energy and Security Act, narrowly passed by only 7 votes in the House and is next headed to the Senate. Conservatives attacked the 8 Republicans who voted in favor of the comprehensive legislation and called for withholding funds for their reelection campaigns and even went so far as to call them cap and traitors.
Traitor, this is driving the wingnuts absolutely loony. Mind you, it's not a long drive, I understand, but they're talking about this. Suddenly, they have decided that this is the greatest tax raise in the history of the world, that Obama has raised everyone's taxes, that he's broken his pledge to not raise taxes on the middle class. They seem to be imagining it, do they not? Here's more from Monica Crowley, sitting in for O'Reilly, speaking with Glenn Beck over on Crazyland, a.k.a. Fox News, earlier this week.
Cap and trade is tantamount to the largest tax increase in the history of the world. So doesn't all of this violate Obama's pledge not to raise taxes on the middle class?
Okay, she earlier said it was the largest tax raise in the history of the world. Now she says it's tantamount. Desi Doyen, is this the largest tax raise in the history of the world?
Well, first of all, it is. She says tantamount because it's not actually a tax. What she's talking about is the implementation of a cap-and-trade system, which would mean polluters have to pay more for the right to pollute. There are going to be provisions in the bill that mean that those costs will not be passed on to consumers, which is what the Monica Crowley is referring to.
So this is not a tax on the middle class?
No, it's not a tax at all. It's an increase in prices.
They're making it up? They're lying at Fox News?
They're making up the idea that this is a tax, definitely.
Okay, yeah. They're lying at Fox News.
The Republican National Committee and other conservative political groups have vowed to use this issue as a campaign tactic in the 2010 midterm elections, but recent polling indicates that tactic may not work as a campaign issue as voters overwhelmingly support clean energy policies. Also, we should note that one of the sponsors of the bill, Henry Waxman of California, was hospitalized yesterday after a fainting spell in his office, but is expected to make a full recovery. The conservative media is also up in arms this week about a study that they say was suppressed by the Environmental Protection Agency. According to the Brain Trust at Fox News Channel, the EPA suppressed one of its own scientists who submitted a report critical of the science behind climate change.
Yeah, and here's Monica Crowley again on this point.
Well, and the EPA, there was a guy, a real great inspector, a legendary guy at the EPA, right, who issued a report earlier this year saying global warming doesn't exist. The EPA suppressed that report.
A guy, a legendary inspector, Sean Hannity earlier this week also called him a scientist who was shut down by the EPA. True or false, Desi Doyen?
Well, of course, it would be scandalous if it were true, but it's not. In reality, the EPA climate scientist is not a climate scientist at all, but an economist with the EPA who studies climate science as his hobby.
It's a hobbyist report.
Yes, the EPA says his, quote, study contained no original research, and they really asked him actually to stick to his own field of expertise.
So they didn't ask him to create this report? This economist did this on his own.
Yes.
And yet the wing nuts are saying they're repressing scientists at the EPA.
That's correct.
Okay, I'm glad to see them worried about science being repressed. Nice change of pace.
The Environmental Protection Agency this week granted a special waiver that had been sought by the state of California and 13 other states to adopt more stringent emissions regulations for cars sold within the state. California first petitioned the Bush administration's EPA for the waiver in 2005. It's a step that was required under the Clean Air Act, but it was denied. The Bush administration arguing that individual states cannot set emission standards, even though the Clean Air Act explicitly gives California the right to do so. The Obama administration had said California's new rules will be the basis for a national mileage standard, as requested by American automakers. Mileage would increase gradually, and by 2016, fuel economy in cars and trucks sold in the state will need to have an average of 35 miles per gallon, which is 10 miles more per gallon than today's 25 miles per gallon.
Sounds good to me.
And just in time for your 4th of July cookout, Kroger stores recalled two store brand products this week due to contamination. On Monday, Kroger stores expanded a recall of all ground beef sold under its store brand name in more than a dozen states due to E. coli contamination. The voluntary recall applies to ground beef from distributor J.B. Swift, and a dozen people have been hospitalized, too, with kidney failure. The first reports of illness occurred back in April. Mind you, it's now July that the recall is coming through. Then yesterday, Kroger announced another voluntary recall, this time their store brand of popcorn seasoning, after their supplier voluntarily alerted them to possible salmonella contamination. This outbreak comes on the heels of another voluntary recall of raw cookie dough products sold under the Toll House cookie brand, this time due to E. coli contamination. The FDA confirmed this week that E. coli was indeed found at Nestle's manufacturing plant. 34 people were hospitalized after eating the raw cookie dough. 9 had kidney failure. The contamination appears to be in an ingredient, not from the equipment or workers, but the plant has been closed indefinitely, and the workers may be laid off.
For more on that and so much more we didn't get to today, check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Send love letters, tips, and hate mail to greennews@bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Have a great 4th of July holiday. This has been your Green News Report.
End of the world.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, we're pretty well into about halfway done with the second hour, but I hope you'll forgive me nonetheless. I'll get back into the swing of this stuff. We'll start hitting top of the hour breaks. I promise, I promise, I promise, I promise. It is 26 minutes past the hour, and I'm hoping you have been patient enough with me to wait so that we can go back to the phones. And you know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Locally, 304-658-3333. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, what's up?
Well, I'm reading the Kennedy bill.
Yes.
Here's some good parts. You can't be tossed out because of a pre-existing condition.
Right.
Comes in at $611 billion instead of several trillion. And it covers 97% of the population. There are no annual or lifetime limits.
Oh, you mean it's just real coverage?
Yeah. here's one that I just ran across that I really liked. Federal fallback in the case of states that refuse to improve health care coverage. In general, upon the expiration of the four-year period following the date of enactment of this section, in the case of a state that is not otherwise a participating state or an established state, A, the secretary shall establish and operate a gateway in such a state. B, the insurance reform provisions provided for in some Title A of Title I of the Affordable Health Choices Act shall become effective in such a state, notwithstanding any contrary provision of state law. In other words, Nevada can ban public option all they want. Tough. By the way, it does have a public option. Now, there is a downside.
Yeah.
It folds in Title 13 of the Social Security Act, which is Medicare, Medicaid, and they'll probably toss in the VA. They have to.
In other words, just making it one unit.
Yeah, they pretty much have to make this work. They have to make it for everybody.
And that, well, isn't that what universal single payer is supposed to be?
Yeah, this is not single payer, though.
No. I recognize that.
Yeah, I would say it's a pretty good step, though. I'm still reading and looking for hooks. Now, it's a PDF file. I was wondering if people would like me to post it on a link to it on the blog.
Oh, do please. I think this stuff has got to be read, Susan.
That's what I was thinking. You know, because here's something that's interesting. You know, the Help Committee, they came out with their own bill, which wasn't very good. The Help Committee has now let it be known. Let me find this. Okay, this is from a blog post by Jason Rosenbaum on HuffPo. And it says, and this is a quote, on the conference call announcing the measure, Senators Dodd, Brown, and Whitehouse said that all 13 Help Democrats would be voting for the Kennedy bill. That's right. Every single one.
Every single one.
Every one of them. And the price tag of $611 billion is from
Congressional Budget Office?
Yeah, it's a CBO.
Right, okay.
So it's, I imagine the fundies are screaming bloody murder.
Oh, but, you know, they do that. Yeah. At this point, fundy screaming and right-wing screaming, it's like a cue in a script.
Yeah,
liberals rescue kitten from tree. Cue the right-wing screaming.
I don't pay any attention until their voices go up at least three octaves. Yeah, you don't know they're in real agony until they go up at least a couple of octaves.
Yeah, because and
so far it's not looking horrendous.
Well, we've got to have a viable.
It would be better.
I want look at the end of the day. I hate that phrase. I got to break myself of that. I just want universal single payer, period.
So do I.
It's the easiest way to go about it.
They asked, I think it was yesterday, they asked Obama, why not universal single payer? And he came out and gave him an honest answer.
Yeah.
Virginia. Said, I can't get it passed.
Right, and the question is why? I mean, I'm not trying to be an ass about
and
this.
And blue dogs.
Yeah, sure, exactly. You know, I found a story earlier this evening, Susan, concerning a man by the name of Wendell Potter. Have you heard of this fellow?
Mm-mm.
He testified last week before the Senate Commerce Committee. And the quote, the pull quote is, and bear in mind, this man is the former vice president of corporate communications at Cigna. Remember Cigna? Cigna was Cigna was the insurance giant that allowed a 17-year-old girl to die for want of a liver transplant. Well, last week, Wendell Potter testified, Susan, and this is a quote, "I know from personal experience that members of Congress and the public have good reason to question the honesty and trustworthiness of the insurance industry." Among other things, let's see, he was also interviewed on CNN, and he also testified to this. I hate it when that happens. But just to finish up, Potter described how underwriters at Cigna would drive small businesses with expensive insurance claims to dump their Cigna policies. And they had a word for it. It was called purging. He said when that business comes up for renewal, the underwriters jack the rates up so much the employer has no choice but to drop insurance. Meanwhile, a spokesperson for Cigna, a person by the name of Chris Curran, said, "We do not practice that." No, you don't practice it. You've got it down to a science. You've gone pro. "We do not practice that. We will offer rates that are reflective of the competitive group health insurance market. We always encourage our clients to compare our proposed rates to those available from other carriers." Who do you believe? And, yeah, this was the guy. And, you know, it's kind of weird. In an indirect way, we talked about him, Wendell Potter. And we talked, and it was one of those conversations about how you live in that compartmentalized world. You go and you do evil all day, and then you come home and you get a kiss on the cheek, and dinner's ready, and you hey, how that's a great job getting that A in algebra, son. Well, it turns out he Potter made his decision to quit Cigna in 2007 after what Cigna did to Nataline Sarkeesian. She's the 17-year-old that Cigna denied coverage to and killed with its denial of coverage. Wendell Potter said, "After she died, my voicemail and my email inbox were just filled with messages from people who were outraged." He's gone to work now for the Center for Media and Democracy, and he writes about health care reform. He says he saw from the inside how the health care industry destroyed any hope for universal health care back during the Clinton administration. You know, it just seems like yesterday. He's doing some reporting on the TV commercials that groups opposed to, that groups in favor of continuing to use sickness, agony, illness, misery, and death as a profit motive are running around the country. Patients United Now is running this from the CNN story. You can get it over at their website. Patients United Now, pun. Do these people even pay attention? Pun. Patients United Now have an ad that says, this is the quote, "Now Washington wants to bring Canadian-style health care to the U.S. Yes, that means your doctor is going to smell like maple syrup or something. Or say, "Hey, take off, hoser." And referring to that ad, Potter said, "Sometimes you'll see misleading information, and sometimes you'll see outright lies like that ad is." at the hearing last week, Senator Jay Rockefeller, who gets a lot of stuff wrong, but is getting at least a little bit of this right. Jay Rockefeller, who is the committee chair on the Commerce Committee, told Wendell Potter, "You are better than Russell Crowe on The Insider." Yeah, largely because this isn't a movie, Senator Rockefeller. This is reality, and these are real people's lives that these corporate bastards are messing with. Amazing. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Here.
Ah, you're back. Okay.
Yeah, I got cut off. Or my phone dropped.
I think we got dropped.
I did want to mention, this will, I'm not sure if the unions will be pleased with this or not, but unions that have pre-existing, when this goes into effect, that have collective bargaining agreements in place, they won't be dumped. They don't transfer to the care system until that bargain runs its you know, course.
Yeah.
They won't be forced out.
Well,
which is a pretty good idea.
Well, again, that's one of those things where you can't look. In large part, healthcare inside organized labor works.
Yeah.
And that's why I keep arguing that it would really make a lot more sense to go ahead and pass and sign into law the Employee Free Choice Act first, and then because there's an urgency to healthcare. But let's see what happens if American people get to join unions and exercise their full First Amendment right to freedom of association, which includes union health care, and see what happens to the numbers after people are free to join unions. But apparently nobody thinks like that in Washington, D.C. Certainly not Harry Reid.
By the way, I called Harry Reid's office and I said, "Hey, you haven't got any excuses anymore, bud. Grow up, Harry." And that's an exact quote. I doubt if that will be transferred on back onto the senator, but I figured I'd give it a whack.
Yeah, I understand.
Another good thing is Obama knocked down the Wyden bill. Yay!
Expand on that, please.
What?
Expand on that, please.
The Wyden bill was basically trash. And I called up Wyden and I informed him I was really, really disappointed in him. And if he didn't straighten up, he was going to find his butt out looking for another job. Merkley, by the way, is for single payer right down the line.
So far, he's getting a lot of stuff right. And I really hope that one of these hearings we go to at Water and Wildlife Subcommittee of Environment and Public Works, I hope he'll show up. Because I think when he gets a full-on view of something like mountaintop removal, for instance, I think he will become a bold advocate. And I hope he sticks to his guns, single payer. And, his only problem is that he's only been there a few months now.
Yeah, he's no friend of big coal, I tell you that. Well, anybody who lives in Oregon is no friend of coal because they keep trying to put those stupid coal-fired power plants in Oregon to belch out crap. And then on top of everything else, we get all of the acid rain coming in from China. No, we don't like coal. Because we get hit with Appalachian coal, even though it was mined 3,000 miles away.
Yeah.
So the part where it says that you can't be, held back by, you can't be barred via pre-existing condition. It also includes disability, credit rating, a whole long list of things. I mean, they they went through the whole list. Marital status, abuse, spousal abuse.
Yeah.
None of it. You cannot be disallowed.
Well, that's where, you know, and this business of, you know, covering 97%. What's the problem? Why can't we get to 100%? I mean, I'm not being deliberately obtuse. I don't understand why we can't get to 100%.
I don't know.
Or why we can't. Okay, let's say, because I know when the CHIPS program, you know, the Children's Health Insurance Plan, when it first came out, there was a lot of trouble, a lot of difficulty in getting people to getting the information to people and then getting them to sign their children up. I understand that part.
Yeah.
And I understand you're always going to have some hardheads out there. But.
Well, I think that's part of it because, you know, they've even, like that part of Ricky, they put in a section where they're acknowledging the fact that there's going to be some red states who are going to be having to be forced to take this. It's going to have to be shoved down their throats.
Oh, yeah. I've got a story. I've got a story here about the fact that there have been, and this isn't necessarily on topic, Vice President Joe Biden's been having conference calls with mayors and governors about the stimulus.
Yeah.
And he's had conversations in these conference calls with dozens of mayors all over the country and 47 of the 50 state governors about the Recovery Act. The people who won't take his calls, Piyush Jindal,
uh-huh.
Rick Goodhair Perry, and Godzilla from Wasilla.
Yep. Why am I not to be surprised?
No, not at all. Not at all. But we have to keep that heat up. And please do go ahead and post that up so people can read it over at Head On Radio. It'll be on, just click blogs under headonradionetwork.com or what?
It'll be on the main, I'll put it on the main site.
Okay.
So, actually it already is on the main site, because if you go up there, to the main site, there is a featured article. I'm bringing it up now. It's got a picture of a doctor and it says featured, and it says Committee Dems Release Cheaper, Better Public Health Care Bill. And if you click on the title, that takes you to the actual article. And if you click on that, it says source article, and you click on that. That's a little bit, I'm gonna redo that. I'm gonna put a link in that featured article.
Okay.
I'm gonna put C bill here, and it'll have a link to it.
Okay, great. Well, Susan, wonderful talking to you, dear. Thanks for the hard work.
May I add one other point?
You certainly may.
About the Israelis?
Yeah.
Actually, 2 points. Have you ever met a person who has had a rough childhood and therefore feels like the world owes him a living?
Yeah.
Now, have you ever heard of the saying, if it walks like a dog, talks like a duck, it's a duck.
Yep. Know that one, too.
Okay. If it walks like a fascist and it talks like a fascist, it's a fascist.
Yeah, and we ain't talking about ducks. We're talking about geese. Goose stepping. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't care if they're doing it on the bodies, on the bones of 6 million of their people. They're doing it also on the bones of the Palestinians. They are acting like their own oppressors. And it's wrong. Two wrongs do not make a right, fellas.
Yep.
You can call me an anti-Semite if you want, that I have supported the state of Israel since the day, almost as long as I can remember. Damn it. You're putting your foot in it.
There's a lot of people who are coming to that conclusion.
And I got to tell you, and this is a message to any Israelis out there or any Jews who think I'm an anti-Semite, but I got to tell you, Golda Meir is rolling over in her grave. She would never tolerate this. And she never tolerated anything that would threaten her country. But by the same token, she never forgot what she was either. You people have. You've lost your souls.
That argument, it's an argument that can be made. And there is for me, there's a profound, and I know that that it's argued that, oh, no, there's no difference. Yeah, there is a big difference. There's a big difference about, it is not anti-Semitic to disagree with the horrible, horrible, cruel, genocidal actions of the Israeli government. It is not.
No, it's not. Here's a piece of breaking news. Kay Hagan, key Senate Democrat, quote, "I support the public plan."
Wow.
I think the world just ended.
We shall see. I hope not. Not before everybody's covered, at least.
Yes. Give me health care first.
Take care, Susan.
If you are on Medicare or Medicaid or on the VA system and you think you do not have a dog in this hunt, you just found out the hard way. You do, because they're going to fold in Medicaid, Medicare, and probably the VA system. So start calling your Congress critters.
Good advice.
Thank you much. Love to Agnes.
All right, thanks. And say hi to Donald for us.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Rolling along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Yes.
Maura, how are you?
I'm fine, Maura. How are you?
Very good. I wanted to call in about the medical program, the public option, and Bill Lieberman. He's come out against it.
Well.
And that's what I'm surprised, but.
Oh, why can't he just go ahead and change that little initial behind his name to R and have done with it? Why do we have to continue with this charade?
Why are we allowing him to be the chairman of the committee on Homeland Security?
But that's almost a rhetorical question, because we know the answer to that, Maura, because Harry Reid has no spine.
That's the God's honest truth. There's no way we can get rid of Reid either, which is the worst part of it.
Not without significant pressure on our individual senators. And yeah, I've never met one, Maura, but I guess there are people out there who just think that Harry Reid's doing a bang up job. And I don't know who they are.
I have no idea why they would think such a thing.
Nor I, but you know, I guess if you're DLC Blue Dog Democrat, you think he's just the neatest thing since sliced bread.
I've got absolutely no use for the man. And especially now, he's not going to do anything that's going to jeopardize his reelection. Because he's up in 2010.
Yes, he is. And I guess.
He's also got his son running for Congress out there.
Does he really?
Yes. It's going to be real cozy.
Oh, I'll bet. I'll bet. And you know, is Nevada happy with him? You know, look,
They weren't thrilled with him, but, I mean, now that they've got Ensign, Reid looks good by comparison.
Yeah, and you know, Ensign, I'm hoping Chip Carter will run against, or somebody. You know, Ensign should not run again. But Chip Carter, Jimmy Carter's son. Oh, he probably will. Yeah, these people are shameless. You know, when it comes to being a Republican,
Totally shameless.
And of course, you know, the death of Michael Jackson completely overshadowed all of that business.
I've never been so sick of a topic in my life.
Oh, this is approaching the funeral of Ronald Reagan for disgusting for me.
Well, one good thing about it, though, it brought me back to reading.
How so?
I just turned off the television. I couldn't stand it anymore.
Well, you know what? I'm expecting to, you know, the Food Channel, the Discovery Channel. It's good. Eventually, it'll be all Michael Jackson all the time.
Well, he's not going to be buried until at least after next Tuesday.
Well, that was my understanding. They're going to truck him out for a memorial service in Gary, Indiana. It looks like they're going to have this comeback tour, whether he's alive or dead.
Exactly.
Remember,
it's a terrible thing to say, but what was it? Not Jackson Brown. Who was the black?
James Brown.
Remember what they did with that poor man?
Yes.
I mean, he didn't get buried for months.
That's just wrong. It is. It's.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the coffin's vacuum sealed or something. How do you?
No, they put enough embalming. And then they actually left.
I'm sorry, Maura, but that's just creepy. ew! I'm really kind of down with that idea that the Muslims and the Islamic and Jewish faith have of, you know, get them in the dirt. Don't waste any time about it.
Any time to really mourn. In the sense that we know mourning.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't been raised with the tradition of the Jews where they said shiver.
Very true. There's a lot of failings in our Western traditions, and dealing with death is probably pretty high on the list. We're no good at it.
No, we're not, unfortunately.
And because of that, you know, getting better?
I think it's made a major change in our outlook.
Yeah. But, going on a grand tour with the body of the deceased somehow is
very sick.
Offensive, to say the least.
Right. How's Berg's neck, by the way?
Well, we're waiting on the results of the CT scan, and I have a feeling, just because I know exactly what it feels like, I think he probably pinched a nerve.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Painful.
Oh, it is. I had one of those. The only thing that helped me it was probably about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago. It was at the same time that I was going through all that business with getting sick and everything. But I was trying to use a rototiller out in what was going to be the garden, and it got away from me, and it jerked my arm real hard, my right arm.
Oh, yeah.
Or no, it jerked my left arm. And as a result of that, I couldn't move my neck for about a month. And the only thing that finally helped were some trigger point injections, you know, down there. And I got relief, and it hasn't been a problem since.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
But I know exactly what he's feeling because it's scary because your arm goes numb just like a heart attack. And
it's scary. Very, very scary.
Yeah, but I know he describes it to me, and I said, oh, son, I know exactly. Yeah, or I suspect I know exactly what it is. So I imagine we'll probably get the results of the CT hopefully by Monday, and I'll let you and everybody else know. Because he's, you know, he's got his own little following now, and he's very proud of it.
Well, he's a good kid.
Yeah, he is. They all are. My daughters are.
I don't doubt it.
Little princesses, and he. Well, I won't call him a prince. more like the court jester around here.
And how's Agnes doing?
She's doing some better. She's fighting off that seasonal pneumonia thing that happens to her. They say pneumonia, or it might be bronchitis or something, but about this time every year. She just gets, and I don't know if it's, you know, maybe it's the humidity, because it does get fairly humid, but the heat and the humidity or whatever, and she just gets to where it has a hard time breathing. And then it'll, you know, when the season changes, she'll be okay again.
Right.
So, you know, we're hanging in.
I hope she feels better.
Today is my son-in-law's birthday, so I'm going to try to do something nice for him.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Well, I won't keep you, Bob. It was nice talking to you.
Oh, good talking to you, Maura. The chime in anytime.
Okay, have a good weekend.
All right, thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Maura calling from New Jersey, and let's keep things rolling here. All right. Okay, or not. Well, dial in if sometimes this phone system, which is getting kind of rickety after almost 4 years, does funny things. But you know, if you've got something to say, don't hesitate. Don't hide your light under a bushel. Pick up the phone and dial it. Okay. I got the most wonderful email last night from Corinne. After talking about the business with Friends of Cole and Applebee's here in West Virginia. Corinne copied me in on something she sent to corporate at Applebee's. She had heard this on the Mike Malloy rerun stream and took action, which was inspiring. Corinne wrote, "Dear Applebee's, how is it possible that you allow this restaurant to post a sign where it is written that Applebee's is a friend of coal? A friend of deaths, pollution, homelessness, mountaintop removal, and destruction? Really? Applebee's a friend of coal in a state where 80% of the population is against mountaintop removal? If you value your corporate image and maintaining excellent customer relations, do not side with a dirty, deadly partner. No one with values, principles, or convictions will enter your establishments anymore. Just as we did, they turn around and leave." So I dropped an email that wrote back to Corinne thanking her. And I've just gotten this response a little bit ago. "Dear Bob, you know that you can count on me to fight for what I believe to be wrong and corporate injustices. This afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, I received a phone call from West Virginia. We had a conversation about the sign at Applebee's, coal mining, and the consequences, which lasted about 30 minutes. Wow. At one point, she said a long, silly, illogical reason why coal mining was actually good for West Virginia, and I laughed at her and told her that her reasoning was all off and could not be backed with scientific facts. The bottom line, Bob, it's the money. I asked her for her email because Applebee's has an open mind over this issue, and we can email anything to her which supports our or the environment's view. Jill.Conway, J-I-L-L.Conway, at mailer, at mailerg or mailerq.com. I can't see because of the way it's underlined. Let me just try this. And we'll see what happens and get a valid. Yeah, mailerg.com. Jill.Conway, Conway, at mailerg.com. As Corinne says, the bottom line, Bob, it's the money. I asked for her email because, quote, Applebee's, okay, I told you that. I am not the only person who has written them about their ignorant stand with coal. She says, my email will go to the top if she wishes Applebee's could get me to come back as a customer, but I said never as long as they're friends with coal. The owner of Applebee's wants the clientele who spend money at his establishment to know that he is with them and he's not removing the sign because he likes their patronage. Applebee's believes that eastern West Virginia needs more flat land for housing, etc., and even Jill's family has reclaimed coal land, which she has cattle grazing on. And until the U.S. has some other industry besides coal mining for energy and fuel, West Virginia will mine coal and have some jobs. Corinne says, I received silence after speaking on pollution. Should change the topic when I spoke of West Virginia kids and grandkids. She says, Bob, perhaps you can be more passionate and fill her mind with doubts on the memorized propaganda. I don't have your knowledge. Oh, yes, you do, Corinne. Oh, yes, you do. You proved it with that email. And the next time somebody tries to tell you about the jobs and the economic benefit that coal brings to West Virginia, there is a new study out by a brilliant medical researcher by the name of Michael Hendricks, H-E-N-D-R-Y-X, H-E-N-D-R-Y-X, Michael Hendricks. And he has found that for every dollar that coal brings to West Virginia, West Virginia loses $5.25, roughly. That's how it breaks down, because the actual numbers are that coal brings in about $8 billion. And because of that $8 billion that coal brings to West Virginia is in turn loses $42 billion. So much for the jobs argument, huh? No, coal is corporate welfare. And it costs us. It costs us our health, our well-being. It costs us the ability to bring other jobs to West Virginia. You know, if you're an even remotely, let's say you're Google, because they're held up as a sort of model of occasional corporate responsibility and decency. You know, they got a nice cafeteria for their workers and a little nap room and stuff like that. And you can go to work in jeans and T-shirts or shorts or whatever makes you comfortable to be the best that you can be while being a corporate employee of Google. Let's say Google wanted to open up a great big new office that wasn't where they are there in, what, Palo Alto? Newsflash to West Virginia and Appalachian supporters of coal. They ain't coming here. Why? Well, it's pretty easy. Why would you ask, if you are a responsible corporate citizen, why would you come to a place where you're going to ask your employees, whom you actually value, to bring their families and their futures and their hopes and their dreams to a place that is poisoned? And a place where the poisoning hasn't stopped and, in fact, will continue. And I'm not just talking about West Virginia, I'm talking about Appalachia. Why would you do that? It's like I said the other night. We can clean up the mess that coal has made, and we can provide awfully doggone good jobs for every single mountain remover in this state doing it. All it takes is the will of we, the people of the United States, seeking to form a more perfect union, achieve domestic tranquility, and secure the common good. I'm probably butchering the language. That's all it takes. It can be done. But we can't make this place a non-poison place as long as the poisoning is still taking place. So I sincerely appreciate Corinne's efforts. William writes in, he says, I look at the, he says, Bob, I wish I was an optimist. I look at these closed auto factories, now soon to be empty buildings woven into this new global economy, and I see canned food, minimum wage jobs with workers trying to compete with wages they certainly can't buy a new fuel-efficient car. It took decades to sell people on cars burning oil, and now it has become a way of life passed down from generation to generation. The oil and energy companies have the money and ways and means to go green, if that's what it takes when the oil begins to run out, and they will hold their power grip. People don't learn in one lifetime. It takes passed down knowledge, and this should have maintained, yet each generation has their own ideas and follow right in the same path as past generations when it comes to the mental picture, and how they see the world already there for them, and continue that as the norm. People don't see the damage, so it doesn't exist. If one has ever followed a car with a blown head gasket and seen the plume of smoke pouring and swirling out of just that one tiny tailpipe, and saw this just how much burned crap as a visual of what comes out of every tailpipe while they sit in traffic, bumper to bumper, rocking to the music from a blown, overstressed speaker. Suddenly, this mix of invisible toxins seen as clean air, would be quite mind-blowing and perhaps even give pause to say to oneself, the hell are we doing? The hell have we done? Well said, William. Thank you very much. And on we go. Or not. Okay, so apparently that was a vote for not. We'll take a little top of the hour break here, find some sort of a tune to play. Because, well, I'm trying to create these little cut spots for John. And hoping that I'm succeeding. But you know you can jump right into the conversation anytime you see fit. This is America's liberal voice, listener-supported, activist-oriented. This is The Horn.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeed. 12 minutes past the hour. I'd say about... a good 35 minutes of conversation left in the program. If you want to chime in, you are more than welcome to. Lines are wide open, 877-443-2366, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 304-658-3333, if you want to reach us that way. It's all just ever so easy. Make use of it. Something I did see earlier today that just gave me a full-body cringe. You know, that really isn't the benchmark for a news story making this program, but... I don't know. I thought about fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and cousins and community members and friends and pals and high school folks, your buddies from high school. An American soldier captured in southeastern Afghanistan is being held by a notorious militant clan, a senior U.S. military official said. Seen this already? The soldier, as well as three Afghan soldiers, were captured by some what are being described as low-level militants. What? They're just a little militant? What? How do we know that? How are they militants as opposed to insurgents? I'm sorry. I'm getting lost in the nomenclature again. But you know how it works. He's been captured. And sold, apparently, or traded up, or to a warlord by the name of Siraj Haqqani, so we're told. And, of course, the American military are doing everything that they can to find him and get him back. You know, I saw a story a few days ago about that was profoundly underreported. We have several homicides in Afghanistan at the hands of CIA operatives that have never even been presented to a grand jury and on which the Justice Department took a powder for prosecution. Murder. Heady murder, as Shakespeare put it. We did that. We've waterboarded, we've tortured, we've sicked dogs, we've beaten, we've raped, we've done horrible, horrible things in the name of freedom. You know the litany, you know the stories. I don't have to go over the gory details again. And now one of ours is in the hands of the enemy. And all we can do, and isn't it sickening to say it, all we can do is hope that they aren't as brutal to him as we have been to them. All we can do is hope that they have a greater sense of morality and mercy than we have. 8 years of torture and torment and outright murder under the Bush administration, and some of it apparently still continuing to this day under the new administration. And that day has finally come that we have talked about, I have talked about, I know others have. That day has finally come when one of ours is in their hands, and all that young man's family can do is pray to a distant God that his captors are not as sick and psychotic and twisted and evil as we were to their people. A statement has been released. Taliban commander Mulvi Sanjeen said that the American soldier visited a military post in the Yusuf Kel district in the Pakitka province and got all liquored up. After getting liquored up, he went back to his car and was captured. CNN reporting that a source within the U.S. military denies the claim the soldier was drunk. Well, how are we to know that? Really? American soldiers don't get loaded? Really? That's going to come as news to some veterans I know. The U.S. military has issued this quote from an unnamed source. The Taliban are known for lying, and what they are claiming are not true. And you know this how? Drunk or sober, however. Because we abandoned any sort of moral high ground. Because we abandoned ethics and morals. Because we abandoned, under the Bush administration, the Geneva Conventions. Because we did all that. His poor family can only pray. So whoever that family is, you are at the very least in our thoughts. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Me?
You.
Yeah, hi, Bob. I've been listening to you for a while, thanks to Mike Malloy.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm an IBEW electrician out in California.
Wonderful.
I've been unemployed for a while.
Not good.
Since January. But I've heard you talk about the wind project back there in West Virginia.
Yes, sir.
Has any of your community colleges have classes on wind power maintenance techs?
Sadly, no.
No.
No, our community.
I mean, one thing, we have a project that's getting ready to go out here, and I live in Redding, California, up by Mount Shasta.
Mm-hmm.
You know where that's at?
Yes, I do.
Well, anyway, we got some mountains out there. The Hatchet Ridge Wind Project is what it's called. And it's getting ready to build, but the local community college is starting a class in the fall for technicians. So I think it's going to be a go. That would be something that you might look at back there in West Virginia if you're. If community colleges aren't training technicians, you might not be able to get wind farms to start.
Well, you mentioned being with the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most forward elements of the Coal River Wind Project. And I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
Duncan Cunningham.
Okay, Duncan, just first name's fine. Mm-hmm. We're just friendly around here that way. Duncan, one of the best parts of the Coal River Wind Project is that the whole thing is predicated on the entire project being built with union labor. But of course,
there's a labor agreement.
Yeah, project labor agreement, exactly. But of course, you know, somebody the IBEW will have among other construction trades and building trades will have to have people on the bench to go and do those jobs. So you're absolutely correct. Now, let me tell you how bass-ackwards it is here, Duncan. We don't necessarily have those classes in place, but we do have community colleges in southern West Virginia teaching young men and women how to be mountain removers and how to be underground coal miners.
Why?
Right. Why? Because at best, they are temporary jobs. And they are jobs that exist entirely at the mercy of the corporate structure of the coal companies. But no, we've got to have that. And, you know, if you just sit and give a couple of minutes thought to it, there's a whole infrastructure that has to be envisioned and put in place. And I think I was talking with Albert a couple of weeks ago when I said, you know, you look down that road and instead of wood shop and metal shop in high school, you have solar shop and wind shop.
Yes, you're right.
And it's that kind of forward thinking we have to engage in. But we have a political structure in this state, and the same thing obtains in other Appalachian states as well, where they don't think that way. And instead you get for instance, in West Virginia, a green renewability portfolio from the state that includes coal as a clean, renewable resource.
Let me give you a website.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of IBEW, Our Power?
No.
Check it out sometime. That's the website. Is just Google search IBEW Our Power. It's our international website that gives you what's going on in the IBEW, because we're training people to do green jobs, solar energy, wind power. There's an interesting video on there about a wind farm that they built in New York State. And this house they built is totally a greenhouse with hydrogen. I forget exactly what it was. Hydrogen-powered solar and...
Oh, I think I've seen some writing on that house. That's a fascinating place.
Yeah, it's in New York. It's in Long Island, I think. The local in Long Island built it. But there's fascinating things going on here in California, especially Local 11, Los Angeles, and 569 in San Diego. They've got solar projects, and then there's that new solar project being built in the Mojave Desert, and the project that was built in Daggett years ago. And you know who owns that?
Who?
The Israelis.
You're kidding. Oh, my God. Let me ask you, Duncan, what is the financial upheaval in California going to do to initiatives toward green energy and so forth?
I have no idea. Nobody has any idea right now.
Everybody, I get the idea just talking to you now, talking to Sandra the last couple of calls, that there's a lot of Californians just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Mm-hmm. The company's called SOLEL. Solel. They're the ones that built the Daggett power plant back in the early 80s. And the ones that are building the power plant in Spain, solar thermal.
Yes.
Where they have the mirrors.
Yeah, our Sunday evening host, John Fox, has talked about that a lot. I think that's... There's
Australia.
An acronym or something for that called SPEGS or SPEGS,
mm-hmm.
and John has been on that bandwagon for a long time. I think he was talking about it just about before anybody else. And then, you know, that's the way forward. That's the future.
Mm-hmm.
The future's not in another blown up mountain. The future's not in, the sun is the most efficient energy source that we have. And yet we insist on continuing to burn this filthy stuff that even when we burn it, we get maybe 40% of the thermal product out of it.
Mm-hmm. Right now I'm hoping that I could go to work on a gas-fired power plant later on this year that's being built down on the Canadian gas line that runs down through California.
Mm-hmm.
Halfway between Redding and Sacramento. It's near the foothills, but it's a PG&E power plant. I worked on one in 2001 back during the Enron days.
Hell yeah.
When we built, I don't know, 20 or 30 of them all over the state, gas-fired power plants. I worked on Sutter Power out of Yuba City, California.
And I suppose a lot of that has dried up with the financial crisis because, or at least the public stuff is, because that would be, I mean, are you seeing stimulus stuff start up? Because part of that whole shovel-ready argument was...
Just highway work. But there's a bridge project here in Redding. I'm hoping they don't shut down because the state went bankrupt. It's something that needs to get done. They started it over a year ago, when they had the first scare with the budget thing a few months ago, they were going to shut it down one day to the next, and then they got something done and it's signed, and it went on. But you never know anymore out here. You don't know. I mean, they're going to start charging parents of school children $100 a year for the people, kids ride the bus.
It really is the triumph of the private sector, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And the Republicans. I hate the Republicans.
How can a person with a soul and a mind not?
Pete Wilson and George Dukmejian screwed up the state. I could go on about the prisons they built years ago. I mean, they passed bond issues for, I mean, they took out bonds for, they built 22 prisons in 16 years.
Good God.
They passed bonds, they bought bonds to pay for these things. They're 20-year bonds, and they're still paying for some of them. It's just crazy. They financed the future to make people rich down in the San Diego area. And that's what really pissed me off, because they built a prison up here, and Pete Wilson's buddies from San Diego built the damn thing. You know, it's just like Halliburton going to Iraq with Bush. Got a governor from San Diego, all his buddies from San Diego start building prisons.
But they don't put the prisons in San Diego, right? They just put the profits there.
No. They build them all over the place. One in Susanville, and then you've heard of Pelican Bay, haven't you?
Yes.
That's like a Supermax in California. That was built in the 90s.
Mercy. Well,
that was the big industry in California in the 90s.
Well, yeah, I mean, and there's a phrase for it, you know, the prison industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were people out there within corporate America's dungeons or towers or whatever, wherever they do their evil work, who had this long-range vision of America as a country made up of half prison guards and half inmates. Because it's such a growth industry. You know, I remember in Texas that, and I can never forget it, the T. Don Hutto Correctional Facility, built as a private prison and has been turned into a concentration camp for undocumented immigrants. And lo and behold, we keep children behind barbed wire there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think the American people are nearly as evil as our prison industrial complex would indicate. We have, you know, what I've described on a number of occasions, we have a punishment fetish. And it's driven by the right wing, and it's driven by the religion industry, Duncan.
Mm-hmm.
Because their view, you know, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Only it's not them who's sinning and falling short. They're building the prisons for us. Because we're the sinners. But I sure do hope things, I don't know how it happens, but things have got to get better for California. Because if it doesn't, it all comes downhill to us, man. And it will will catch up. And anybody who thinks it won't, think again. So I do hope things get better out there. And I hope there's serious skull sweat being poured into how that happens. Although I frankly don't know how you get better as long as Arnold's the governor.
No, I don't know either. But one thing for sure is, sure heck on fire.
Well, Duncan, so good
I lived. I live right in the middle of the baddest ass fires last summer. I mean, the smoke was so. I quit smoking last year because of the fires. It was something else.
Oh, yeah, because you were just getting it for free?
Oh, yeah. I didn't need to smoke anymore.
Yeah, breathing was enough.
Breathing was... You were wondering whether you were going to survive.
Lord.
I mean, you just have to look at a satellite picture from... We had hundreds of lightning fires start on June 22nd or something last year. I mean, sure, you heard about it, but
yes.
I'm out here and met Arnold here. The one thing about Arnold, he's been to our city more times than any other governor in the history of the state.
Well, that's a, so. Well, do you think that means that he knows what's going on?
Well, he tries to stay with knowing what's going on, but it's all because of the fires. He's come up here basically, and there's been some other things. He had a bus tour through here. Anyway, that was our claim to fame last year. That put us on national news because of the fires in Northern California. Our little bit of global warming.
Yeah. More than we know. Duncan, good to talk to you. I hope you'll chime in again.
I'll try.
All right, take care. Keep us posted.
It's great listening to you.
Oh, it's great to know you are.
Thanks.
Bye now.
Bye.
Oh, I love having new callers. Have you never called the program before? Why not? This is fun. This is conversation. This is what it really, really sounds like. And we've never lost a caller yet, at least that wasn't technical. So, you know, 304-658-3333 directly or toll-free 877-443-2366. First timer? Give it a try. You might enjoy it. You know, if you were listening to the Green News Report a little bit ago, you heard the story from Desi Doyen and Brad Friedman brought along about Kroger's and their beef recall, that the beef's been bad since April and they just got around to it now. And it turns out the popcorn salt, popcorn seasoning is poisoned with salmonella. Well, it's apparently not just us. Got an update in from our buddy Robert in Japan, Dateline Nagasaki. Three former food processing company executives were convicted Wednesday. Oh, I like that. Now, I wouldn't mind. Those are the people that need to wind up in prison. You know, not some guy who was caught on the side of the road with a couple of doobies. Doobies? Wow, am I a geek or what? I'm sorry, blunts. Three former food processing company executives were convicted Wednesday of falsely labeling vegetables grown in China and selling them as domestically grown products. The Nagasaki District Court sentenced Toshihachi Abe, 68 years old, former president of Cassie Company, to 2 years in prison. Cassie, that sounds awfully Western, doesn't it? To 2 years in prison, suspended for 3 years for violating the unfair competition prevention law. They got one of those? The lower court handed the same sentence to Suneo Takayama, 59 years old, former managing director of the now defunct company, and Chimitoshi Yamamoto, 44, former chief of Cassie's Nagasaki plant. Here's how the whole dodge worked. Those three guys, Abe, Takayama, and Yamamoto, conspired to put about 2 tons of Chinese-grown cauliflower and green asparagus into cardboard boxes labeled domestically produced at the plant in, Robert, you know, I was doing real good with the names, Minamishimabara, I don't know. I don't know where the accent falls. Minamishimabara, between July and September of last year. And, you know, really, this stuff is contagious. Remember when it turned out that the downer beef was the stuff that might be just mad cow, crazed, laden, the E. coli, God knows what, was making it into American children's school lunch program? Right. Remember that? Sure. Well, in Japan, the vegetables were later delivered mainly for school food services. A judge said the crime fueled anxiety among consumers and people engaged in school food services at a time when public interest in food safety was increasing. Prosecutors had sought 2 years in prison for all three defendants. So, America sneezes and the world gets... Well, that's probably not a good analogy, but yeah, we do it. And yeah, corporatists are corporatists to one degree or another. Hey, what if we give the school children some suspect food and jack up the price? And say, yeah. Did anybody go to prison for potentially feeding poisonous meat to school children in America? No. No. On the other hand, in Japan, at least 2 years, at least a prosecution. And that's a valid function of the prosecutorial process. Yeah, Cossack in the chat room asks, whatever happened to the good old days when those guys would have committed seppuku to cover their dishonor? Yeah, I know. I know. So thanks to Robert for that update. Susan, our news ninja, tells me that the links to the Kennedy bill are now in the post at headonradionetwork.com, so go and have a look and have a read and, you know, be an informed citizen. Not a bad notion at all. A little bit of a win on our side. Surprising, too. You know, the right wing has gotten away with just about anything that it wanted in terms of who and how they smeared people. I don't know that this is necessarily evidence that the tide is turning, but it's turning in one locale, and it's a good place to see it happen. Virginia. I don't know if you were aware or not, but the National Republican Congressional Committee paid to produce an ad that attacked freshman Democrat Tom Perriello on climate change and the climate change bill. It was a really, really nasty ad that was just full of garbage, lies, as in untruths, as in not reflective of reality. Here, let's see if we can get this for you.
Under my plan of a cap-and-trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket.
That's right, skyrocket. It'll destroy jobs and cost middle-class families $1,800 a year every time you turn on a switch. And Tom Perriello's voting with Obama and with Nancy Pelosi over and over. Call Perriello. Tell him he was wrong to vote for the Pelosi energy tax. The National Republican Congressional Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Lying bastards! Just because that's what they are. $1,800. You know what? You know where that number comes from? Space! Thin air! No air! Ether! Made up! Dummied up, faked up, frauded up, gymmed up, rubed up, ain't real. Contrary to everything that is said there, there is a study out there by the Center for American Progress that says clean energy economy legislation will create 1.7 American million jobs. Now, I don't know, so don't hold me to this. I hope none of those 1.7 million American jobs in clean, green energy are being considered as coming from clean coal technology or any of that silly horse crap. According to the Congressional Budget Office and their look at the climate change bill, which admittedly is just pitifully weak, it can't lift. It's so weak that if it was the little bill on Capitol Hill from, you know, government schoolhouse rock or whatever, it wouldn't be able to lift its little head off the pillow. That's how weak it is. But according to the Congressional Budget Office, by 2020, as I think we discussed, the annual cost would be about $175 per household. In other words, the cost of a postage stamp every day. But no, the Republican Party said, nah, $1,800, $31 million a family. Meanwhile, there are no National Republican Congressional Campaign Committees ads talking about how much families are having to pay for their stupid, bloody, ignorant, hateful, miserable little misadventure in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. No. Eric Cantor, R, Britney Spears fan, twittered a message, I guess, last week saying, The national energy tax will cost $3,100 for all Americans. Lies. Brad and Desi mentioned, it's a blatant misuse of an MIT study. And the guy who wrote the study has begged these people to quit lying. But, you know, he's talking to Repiglicans, for the love of God. They're going to lie. Because lying is what they do. And the sad thing is, their lies, you know, whole cloth, $1,800 per, $3,100 per family, millions of dollars per family. The climate change bill requires the sacrifice of virgin children on top of volcanoes for carbon. And, I mean, you want to hear the breadth of the lies? I threatened Albert with this one earlier, and I'm going to play it, darn it. Get this. We're back to Glenn Beck again, the guy who calls himself a rodeo clown. Yeah. With a crawler saying, unread bill passes in House. Morning of vote, Democrats added 341 pages. Well, at least we know that if the Republicans had added 341 pages, the pages would be bent over. That was cheap. Now, so Glenn Beck offers his wisdom on this. For God's sakes, let's just get this over with. Remember, we're talking about breadth of lies.
What's going on here in our government? They are overwhelming the system intentionally.
In a way, no one's seen.
Nobody's ever done this before. What are in these 1,300-page bills? First of all, who's read Atlas Shrugged? Anybody read Atlas Shrugged?
Atlas Shrugged. Yes, I've read Atlas Shrugged twice. Ugh.
This big.
It took a year.
Les Miserables is this big. It is. This bill is 150 pages longer than Atlas Shrugged.
Right.
It's about 70 pages shorter than
no
Les Miserables.
But no one in anything about reducing our dependence on foreign oil.
Yeah, because these weirdos don't have a comprehension of the fact that, let's say you've got Atlas Shrugged, and if you do, God only knows why. Little tiny words, and it's this big, and the bill's this big. But the bill's not printed in that little tiny typeface. I mean, I've seen that. You've seen that kind of stuff. There's a lot less words on the page. But, you know, if you're at Fox and you're talking to an audience that has the average IQ of a wounded dung beetle, you can do comparative analysis of legislation by talking about how big the bill is. It's this big! Okay, let's go back to the Bimbet.
None. You know what?
1,400 pages, isn't that one of the main concerns of people in America?
And that's what's been billed as. This is what's been billed.
They're not. We are going to be, you know, Donald Trump, I want to talk to this guy. When he was on the show just a few minutes ago, I'm listening to him, I'm thinking, you're exactly right. How can you not be laughing at us? How can the world not be? We have all of these resources. Why did we buy Alaska in the 1950s?
Yeah. What? Wait, sports fans, let's do that again.
Have all of these resources. Why did we buy Alaska in the 1950s?
Yeah.
We bought Alaska for the resources. And then we say no.
Right.
As News Ninja Gene points out, they won't tell you that they're using Atlas Shrugged as an economic textbook.
Yeah, no, they won't.
Why did we... You heard that, right? I mean, this isn't some ugly flashback, is it? That really got said, right? Why did we buy Alaska in the 1950s? We bought Alaska for the resources, and now we say no. Sometimes I play stuff on this program that just make it just... I quit. I wish I had, you know the sound of the cork coming out of the bottle? Actually, no, it's not the sound of the cork coming out of the bottle. It's the old drunk at the bar in the old Bewitched show who would see you know, Samantha appear and disappear on the bar stool next to him, and it would just reach into his, set the drink down and walk away and pull the pint bottle out and throw it in the garbage as he would, because he'd had enough. You've heard of sobering statistics? That's one. We bought Alaska in the 1950s. And it's bad enough that the Glenn Beck is so damn stupid as to say it. But then you have to factor in the million or more citizens, you know, who get to go and vote on stuff in this country who heard him say, yeah, that's why we bought Alaska in the 1950s, Muriel, for the resources in the 1950s. We bought Alaska. We did in the 1950s. Bought. Yeah. Muriel? Ariel, where's my Thorazine? You know? Just, and you know what? That thing, that'll take wings. That'll get legs. It'll take root. It's good. That's the most compelling reason. That's the most compelling argument against that climate change bill. Is it completely ignores the fact that in the 1950s, we bought Alaska for the resources. Bought it from the Eskimos. We did. I think Glenn Beck was homeschooled. Bought Alaska in the 1950s. Can't make it up. You don't know how badly I wish that wasn't real. But it is. And it has an independent reality for millions of people. Because they trust that squirrely little bastard. It's breathtaking. And whether it's the hate crimes bill or climate change or health care, the right wing is out there to just tell broad, sweeping lies to a segment of the American population that doesn't have enough sense to wipe the drool off its chin. Case of genius in point. Remember when we had a little low-grade hissy a few weeks back because, lo and behold, a bill had been signed into law that just, while it didn't have anything to do with the rest of it, just conveniently allowed guns to be carried into parks? Well, actions have consequences. WSMV-TV out of Nashville reporting via their headline, TSSAA says tourism event needs gun ban. City Council concerned guns in parks law eliminates Murfreesboro from spring fling. TSSAA, for those who are not Tennesseans and might not necessarily catch on to it real quick, is the Tennessee Secondary Schools Activities Association. That is the organization that oversees sports in secondary schools, high schools basically, middle schools. And in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, they have something called Spring Fling. And thousands of children and their moms and dads, and their moms and dads' credit cards, come from all over Tennessee, which is a damn big state. You know, it didn't take you the biggest part of a day or more to drive from East Tennessee to West Tennessee. It was a long ride on I-40. It's a 6-day, 5-sport event, Spring Fling is, and it's held in Murfreesboro. Mona Herring is with the Rutherford County Chamber of Commerce, and she said, it sells out all of our hotel rooms, our restaurants are packed, and they say a huge impact on the shopping malls. And Murfreesboro is trying to get the spring fling. The local Chamber of Commerce is going hammer and tongs day and night, trying to win that bid. And the Tennessee Secondary Schools Activities Association, or Athletic Association, I'm not sure which, said, you know, we do have this zero tolerance policy about guns on school grounds and off-campus events like spring fling. Oddly enough, they don't allow guns at the ballpark. God knows why. Kill the umpire! Come on, please. It's the South. They'll take it seriously. So the TSSAA says they'd like to see a gun ban before Murfreesboro gets to play because they've got this, you know, carry a gun anywhere law. And the city, the report notes that the city can vote to opt out of new guns in parks law, but there's a member of the city council by the name of Toby Gilley. And Toby Gilley says, to say that we have a blanket, we need to have a blanket ban on all parks and walking trails. No, no, we don't need a blanket ban, Toby. We need a gun ban. But yeah, who the hell am I? To say that we need to have a blanket ban on all parks and walking trails because of one specific event, I think it's just overreaching. Then there's Murfreesboro Mayor Tommy Bragg. He says, I think our densely populated city with our city residents and business owners, mostly of these people when taken as a whole, probably agree we don't need guns in parks. Why would you go to a park where you need to bring a weapon? Why indeed? Why indeed? So, I got this story from David in Tennessee, and I was just gobsmacked by it. Breathtaking. Because, you know, it's that tourism thing again. And I think Mayor Bragg's kind of got it. You know, what's the motto go? Y'all come, but come packing? Come hard or don't come at all? Now, personally, I know we likes our guns, but there ain't no lily-livered Yankee going to want to come down here and spend them Yankee dollars if you got to buy a gun, too. Percy, get this roped in and tied down, too, before this gets out of hand, and we got Yankees with long guns hiking the Smokies. Y'all remember how that worked out last time the Yankees went hiking with long guns? And yeah. But then, you know that the NRA's out there. They're Johnny on the spot on this kind of stuff. I'm sure there'll be an ad out soon. Take me out to the ball game. I'll bust a cap in the stands. Buy me a Glock and a Remington. It ain't baseball if I ain't got a gun, and I'll shoot at the road team. You gotta lead those shortstops. And it's 1, 2, 3 shots, you're dead at the old ball game. Yeah, I won't sing anymore tonight. God almighty, how did that... Purdy's only skin deep, but stupid goes clean to the bone. I wonder how they'd feel about the spring fling up in Alaska, where they, you know, they were purchased by the U.S. government in the 1950s for the resources. Makes your little head hurt, don't it? Well, we made it through another program. Malloy will be on his way on his stream in about 4 minutes or so. And after Malloy is done being live, if you're listening that way, welcome to the program. Hope you enjoy what you hear. Feel free to chime in, share anytime you want to. BobKincaid@gmail.com. BobKincaid@gmail.com. Love to get the letters. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Everything that happens here happens because of what Ben does with WhiteRoseSociety.org. There's not a packet passed that doesn't pass through Ben's servers. Thanks to all the news ninjas, the chat room moderators, forum mods, bloggers. Thank you. Thanks to Peter Godbold and John Fox. Keeping stuff going here. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. More and more you know why I say what I say about them. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
And now, here is Guy James. Yes, the irrepressible Guy James. Hey, welcome to the show this afternoon. Good to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We're going to try and have a upbeat program for you today. I hope there's some upbeat things going on. Not a whole lot anyway. We're gonna talk about the news and views and all that's happening, and we're coming to you from the beautiful blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, Naples, Fort Myers area. And we do hope you're having a nice day. I certainly am so far. It's one of those days where I've enjoyed being in the studio. Getting a lot of reading done today that I've been a little lax on getting done. So that's always a good thing. Never can read too much, can you? No. A lot going on. I see the governor of South Carolina, the hiker. They have found nothing out of the way with his money reconciliation on his trips to Argentina. So at least he wasn't... wasn't hiking on the public's dime, so to speak. He was on the public's time, I guess. How does that work when you're a governor? Do you have a certain 40 hours that you have to put in and be over and above that why you get over to, I don't know how that works exactly, but when is it your time and when is it the public's time and how would they ever say anything about you doing anything on, at any time, you could always say, hey, I work, well, never mind. I don't know where I was going with that. Yes, you are listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We do have quite a bit to talk about today. I did want to get that out of the way, talking about Governor Sanford and the money. I assume it's all going to work out now. Everything will be fine. We do have a few minutes of Republican love coming up a little later on today. I've saved up things from the past couple of days and decided there are a few little notes good enough to, decent enough to read to you. Sometimes the correspondence we get is a bit naughty, a bit indecent, or a bit just downright thuggish and, you know, impolite. But if someone writes and they have a sense of humor, or at least it looks to me like they have a sense of humor, lots of times they misspell words and all that, and make them either they've done it in great haste, and I do that now and then. Do you ever misspell something and send it out? I have. I don't use spell checker. And let me tell you why. I don't use spell checker because it keeps my brain more active if I have to think about a word here and there. I don't know. It just helps keep my brain a little more in shape, I think, rather than depend on the spell checker. So if you ever get any correspondence from me and there are misspelled words in it, and there's apt to be, why, keep in mind, you know, I'm just an old radio guy who, well, I did get good grades in spelling, as I recall, if I can remember that far back. It has, my, it's been a long time since I got a grade in spelling. When did you stop having spelling in school? Was it about the fourth grade or so? I can't remember. I went to school so long ago we didn't even have kindergarten. You were thrown right into the first grade. Oh, yeah. Started to school when I was five. Did any of the rest of you go to the first grade when you were five? I was the youngest kid in my class. Everybody was older than me. I didn't mature till a year after I got out of school. Most folks say I didn't mature even then. Ah, yes. Well, it's good to stay young. Where was I? Thank you for joining us today. I did want to make a mention, and I hope you will all take me seriously. I want everybody to know. Well, yes, Betsy, it's because I'm from cow country. I thought I'd try to get away from that. She's the Texas Betsy's giving it to me on the chat room. that was a feeble excuse, wasn't it? Pointing out a misspelled word on my site. Yeah, I meant to do that because we raised cattle, you see. You're not buying that, are you? No. All right. I did want to mention that Ben Birch is having a fun drive right now at the White Rose Society. And a dollar out of every five is going to Head On Radio Network. And as you know, we here at Head On Radio Network are not blessed with great funds. And it is a rather serious matter, so I hope that you'll remember that and go over and help out Ben a little bit and Head On Radio Network and the Guy James Show as well. If you can, that would be something that would be greatly appreciated. Hi-ho, we got Al Franken, finally. We heard about that a couple of days ago, that now he's going to be officially sworn in. And I have to admit, I had ambivalent feelings about Al Franken, when he first announced almost 3 years ago that he was running for the seat that was occupied, and you must remember this, that seat was occupied by a dear, dear friend of his. He was very close with Paul Wellstone. And Paul Wellstone, you know, a lot of people laughed over that. And I must admit, I think I did as well. And that's okay. Al originally made his name, 34, 35 years ago as a comedian. And laughter's the tool of his trade. And doesn't it just make you absolutely giddy to know that it's he who's having the last laugh here? Because when you stop and think about it, and you look around at all the politicians you've seen in your lifetime that have had some sort of a public persona and gone before the TV cameras or radio microphones, the halls of Congress have been littered with unintentional comedians. And I can think a lot of them who've made some real funnies that didn't mean to. And at long last, we've got a professional in Washington, and not just a comedian, but he's a humorist. And he's the, you know, a Mark Twain type of humorist. And there's a decided difference. And remember this. And do remember this. When Senator Franken, that sounds good, Senator Franken, when he makes you laugh, that will be his intent. And he's good at it. And Franken's victory, finally, after being elected, 8 months ago, can only really be described as some sort of poetic justice, because the very image of Norm Coleman just makes me want to puke. And I have never, knowing the story, I've never been able to forgive Norm Coleman for the utterly despicable campaign that he was running against Senator Wellstone in 2002. And I guess my point here is that Paul Wellstone was one of us. Paul Wellstone was a real Democrat, unlike so many that are so cowardly these days. He never forgot that he was the political descendant of Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, and he was absolutely unapologetic about it. He was a, like myself, a card-carrying liberal. And he was never embarrassed to say it out loud. And he truly was a man of the people. God rest his soul. And if you remember that campaign, Coleman against Wellstone, in the final days of that contest, in a fit of absolute desperation, Norm Coleman ran a series of ads which implied that if Wellstone was reelected, that he was going to tax the family farms all over the state of Minnesota out of existence via this so-called Republican, the way the Republican called it.